morning.
Let's start out with our Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we're going to start with the roll call, but before... You decide. Put that pencil in there by the table in case somebody doesn't know. Thank you. This may end up being a little bit longer meeting, so we're going to try to keep this as tight as we can. People from the audience today, I would ask that you get recognized, if, you know, rather than just take speaking out. And let's try to keep the chatter inside as quiet as we can so that everybody can hear. All right. Thank you. Roll call, please.
And with that, and because our minutes are all transcribed, and you have a new transcriptionist in this case, if you don't mind, let's just go down and everyone introduce themselves. And that way, when she's transcribing the minutes, she'll be able to recognize my voice from yours and this sort of thing. So obviously, I'm Neil Dorrell. I'm the district manager, and we'll typically be at meetings as necessary. But Kevin?
I'm Kevin Carter, manager.
David Schmidt, district engineer.
Russ Kish, board member.
Steve McNamee, board chairman.
Kevin Baird, seat one.
Annalise Hansen, seat five.
And Dan Drucky, seat two.
Tony Pierce, district council.
And in addition,
Mitch Gilbert, Florida Utility Solutions.
Thank you for that. And then, ladies and gentlemen who are here, if you're recognized during the course of the meeting, if you don't mind at least identifying yourself, and if there's a particular neighborhood that you're here with that is important to the discussion, you can also share the neighborhood or position that you might have with the community.
So we're not televising this?
We're not. Now, that was one of the things that, I mean, as part of our orientation, if you want to televise these going forward, we'll have to make separate arrangements to do that. Otherwise, we will use a specific teleconference service that we have. I know that one of your board members does still work professionally, so we're not televising today. We're not required to. A lot of the things that were put into place during the COVID with the governor's executive order have been lifted. But if that is something to your community going forward, we could certainly make arrangements to do that.
Your other communities that you're working for, are they televising theirs?
None of them.
None of them?
And we do not televise, even our Pelican Bay client, none of our other districts. We have a total of six districts, and none of them have televised. The Board of County Commissioners, they do televise, but, I mean, they have their own public access television channel.
So we would have to come up with a cost with you.
I'd be happy to evaluate it, and if you want, if you think that is meaningful to simulcast these meetings to your community, we would need to give some cost aspects to that.
Could you do that? Get us a cost on that there, and then we'll bring it up at the next, well... Maybe you and I can get together beforehand, and we'll try to decide if it's something that we should, you know, if it's cheap, we'll probably do it. If it's expensive, we probably won't do it. But it'll be a board decision, and of course, whatever.
Yeah, I know all of us made certain COVID-related accommodations, but I think at this point we're well past that. But we'll get some cost proposals as to what that would be as an option going forward if it's something you thought adds value.
I know a lot of the people here really like it, so
we just did it. It wasn't live. It wasn't a simulcast.
Okay,
we would post it on YouTube.
Okay,
after the fact.
Yes, it was. Was it simulcast? Was it live?
It was simulcast.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. Would you identify yourself?
Sure. Because we're near. 231
J. Right.
I'm sorry. Last name?
Lishear. Lishear.
Thank you. Otherwise, the record should reflect that all of the board members are present this morning. In addition to key staff, there's no reason to actually have a physical roll call, but the minutes will reflect that the entire board was here and that the meeting was convened at 9:30. And the notice of today's meeting, an affidavit, is on file at the district office, which is 5672 Strand Court in Naples, Florida. With that, I think that takes us down, Mr. Chairman, to the approval of today's agenda or with any additions that the board might have.
Before that, we've got public comments.
I actually have approval of the agenda as number two and then public comment number three.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Absolutely.
Any additions or revisions to today's agenda? Any add-on items from the board's perspective?
Yes. Bruce from 148 Venus K is present here, and he wants to revisit putting in fence on the two sides of his property in lieu of putting up a fence around his pool for safety reasons. So we're going to discuss that with him at some point here. Also, there's a fellow that was coming in to speak to us about, does consulting for getting in fiber optics. Is that fellow here?
Yeah.
There he is. And he's got a very limited time schedule, and I told him that we would get him in right at the very beginning of the meeting so he could meet it.
Yeah, suggestion then on the two of those under old business, I would have item 9A, which is the fence issue that you just alluded to, and then if you want to accommodate this other gentleman, we can do that under public comment. Let's call that 3A.
Okay, that'll work fine.
If there are no other additions to the agenda, you can entertain a motion to approve as amended. Is there a motion?
I make a motion.
Is there a second? Thank you for that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. And now, Mr. Chairman, that takes us down to public comment for items either on or not on today's agenda.
There should be something on the table here about public comments.
No.
No?
There are some people who have
attended.
Yeah, they just.
Oh, in the past we've put a sheet out so that they can put down what
yeah,
they want.
Yeah, if people want to specifically be recognized as part of the minutes of today's proceeding, you can sign in. Otherwise, anybody can talk about anything under public comment, and so I think we'll entertain those initially. And then the one gentleman who has a specific proposal will do that. Again, if you just don't mind being recognized by the chair and then for help me to introduce yourself. Thank you.
Catherine?
Catherine Tellmeyer, Sunset K Lake, 1600 on Newport Drive, 314. Steve, last meeting you and I talked about meeting, and that didn't happen. I did happen to see Soto, and his guys cleaned out the cots. Are we going to try to meet again to go on about the signs and some other issues that have come up since then?
I removed the signs that you had spoken of.
Okay.
I removed them, and I put them in at the water treatment plant. So we can try this for a while. If you're finding parking in the wrong spots, we can reestablish those signs.
Okay.
So however you want. And as far as I've got this here for you, I went out and cleaned those pots myself, and you said that, you know, basically I wasn't telling you the truth.
Sure.
That's the time and so forth that I was there and did that.
They were still there.
You know.
We're arguing. Doesn't matter. It's done. That's all that matters.
Is there anything else, Catherine?
No. If you have nothing else, then I have nothing else.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, here, 231 Hayes Drive. I just want to make sure that in the future, this agenda seems a little short on specifics. It's hard for the people to know what's going on when we have words like attorney's report with nothing under it, engineer's report, nothing under it. We don't know what you're discussing if it's not on the agenda.
Yeah, old business.
Or old business, anything.
Thanks for your input. Anyone else?
Deborah Jansen, Sunrise K. In the past, if we requested it, we received a packet, actually, of what the discussions were going to be at these meetings, and I requested it this week, and I only got the agenda. So I just wonder what the status was of residents receiving the tax?
That's a good question. I don't know what our contract says about it, but in the past, Cal, in his contract, was supposed to provide agenda packets on our website, which, to my knowledge, never happened.
Right.
But we've told people that if they want a copy of that agenda packet, lead us to the meeting. And I think that's what she's asking for.
Yeah, let me just in advance tell you what the concern might be. As we go to assemble everything, whether it's financial statements or agendas and backup material, we try to stay in rhythm. Mm-hmm. So that we can be productive. In this particular case, I know that, you know, we got a late proposal from the civil engineer for design-related services, and I don't want to be uploading what some people in the public may think is an agenda package and then show up at a meeting and see that, oh, well, where did that come from? Well, it wasn't received until, you know, the Wednesday afternoon before the meeting, or I get Mitch's monthly report, and I don't want people to think that we're withholding information. So let me just give a little thought to that. You've never done that in the past. What we do a week in advance of the meeting is upload the agenda index to the website by law. But as things drift in, and by things I mean backup materials, if things are received late, and they end up in your printed and bound copy, but somebody 2 days ago, you know, requested or tried to download the agenda. I just don't want people think that we're slipping things onto the agenda because it's a timing issue. But I'll be happy to give a call to that.
And my thoughts on that are, like, see, there's a lot going on Parcel 13, and some of it's going to be in the meeting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're looking for, so that they can make decisions and they can talk amongst themselves and whatnot before the meeting. Maybe we say we send out what we have at that time, but that may or may not be a complete thing.
Let me give a little thought to that. I understand the interest.
Yes.
I just don't want it to create another point of conflict between the public and the board if they think that they haven't received the entire packet because we're waiting for the receipt of stuff that ultimately gets bound into the documents that we bring here.
Okay. Deb, can we get back with you on that?
Yes, it could maybe just be called a draft packet or something so that then people know that there may still be some changes before the meeting. But it does help to be able to review it and helps people make a decision of whether or not they want to accept.
For lack of a better term, is there a president's council in this community that is sort of loosely organized amongst all the individual condominium or single family? There's not? Okay.
But you know what? That might not be a bad thing to try to be established here, because I've in the past tried to, you know, reach out to them, and there's so many different ones, it's really hard to...
Yeah, and I don't necessarily. I mean, if we have an agenda for whatever reason, it ends up being, say, 180, you know, pages long, and I'm trying to scan and upload that to the website because it's got, you know, construction documents or things of that nature that you need to have access to. But let me give a little thought to it. But I understand the interest. If we could identify certain, you know, key individuals or something in the community and provide them with the same information that I provide to you in advance of the meeting, then everybody's at least on the same playing field.
Okay.
And I have a related question. You said that this is not being televised today, so people can participate via Zoom. But my question is it being recorded, and then will it be available?
It's always recorded, and the recording becomes a public document. In this case, it's digital. And if people wanted to have a copy of the digitized file of today's proceedings, it's a public record, and I routinely make those available.
Would it be available just upon request, or is it going to be available on the website?
It would be available upon request.
How do you guys feel about that?
It's always been on the website.
The request?
No, the document.
The digital file?
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to that. I mean,
it's not a big deal to do it, right?
No.
I'd rather see it there because even I can refer to it.
forget.
That would be nice if you would do that for us.
We can. You know, sometimes there might be quality issues if somebody is all the way in the back of the room, and people just need to understand that. Any final public comment this morning before we defer to the other gentleman? If not, then, sir, if you would, and again, introduce yourself just for purposes of the record.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Please come up here.
Up here?
No. Thank you.
There's a mic here, too. It just needs to be turned on.
On the bottom.
It's on the bottom.
Well, good morning, everyone. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Thank you so much for giving me a few minutes. Just wanted to introduce myself. My name is Joe Burton with Wi-Fi Advisors. And what we do is we specialize in consulting for fiber optics and bulk agreements. I understand, as I've some discussions with Steve, that there's been a level of interest, I don't know how high yet, in bringing fiber optics to the community, improving the internet service here. So what we do is we work for the association. We work for Portobello. And we would negotiate and procure all of the different proposals, tailored solutions to the various viable service providers that are out there. We work exclusively for you guys, so I have no bias towards any of the providers that are out there. We help not only with the negotiation of it, but it's a construction project as well. So we're also helping facilitate with the project management of it, which could be rather messy at about 750 units, right?
That's 5,800, something like that.
So yeah, it'd probably be about a 9 to 12 month construction process. So we're here to support with that. And in addition, we don't just negotiate it, we also are with you for the life cycle of the agreement to make sure that whatever service provider may be selected, if it's something that the board is interested in, that they're being compliant, consistent with everything that they commit to, and it's very importantly that we're helping protect against technological advancements that happen. That's something I'm very passionate about. These are longer term agreements because the deployment of fiber optics is so expensive. So one thing I really, really work with the board and work with the attorneys on is to ensure that there is a lot of flexibility for the board and protections throughout that longer term agreement. Because bringing fiber optics is great, but we don't know what may be out there in the year 2028, 2030. We want to make sure that we take that into account. We work exclusively on a contingency basis. So at the end of the process, the board may say, hey, you know what, these are great offers, but at the end of the day, we're just not ready for it. Why don't we come back and try next year? And that's fine. That's the risk that we take. Ultimately, the compensation for our consulting firm doesn't cost the board or the association any retainer fee, anything out of the operating budget. You guys benefit 100% from all the different savings and the features from the agreement. Whichever service provider may be selected by the board, they would compensate us directly, similar to like a healthcare broker. If you use a healthcare broker, you're not paying them, United Healthcare or Aetna is paying them. So similar to that effect. And then just in conclusion, we've worked a lot inside Southwest Florida. I have a list of properties that we've worked with. So we specialize inside South Florida. We're out of Miami. And then Southwest Florida as well. And have the privilege to negotiate over $500 million worth of contract value. Thank you so much for the time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you guys have, and I have some supplemental information to offer as well to leave on.
Dwayne Dion, DWYNDION. There are several communities in here that have recently subdivisions that have recently renegotiated their contracts. Will the company coming in negotiate those contracts out or buy them out? How does that work?
It's a great question. So I have to take a look at all those contracts individually. Sometimes there is language out there that allows for early termination, and it's gotten so competitive among the viable providers out there that at times the providers will buy out a subdivision for an overall deal with the master. So the great thing is that there's great competition out there. There's a lot of leverage at 800 units that you guys have, and everything's on the table. Now, I will say, though, there may be not you know, an early termination fee inside there, and we have to take it on a case-by-case basis. But I have to take a look at those to be able to answer that very specifically.
One other question is, I don't know in the future, Steve, how this will affect the new units going in. Is there some preparation that can be made in advance for them to hook up as well to a new?
Yeah, that's part of it, why we want to get going on this now, so that Lindsay can put that all straight in.
Okay.
And they won't have to come back after the fact and deal with it.
And just to add, you know, for those that, you know, that are unaware of what fiber optics are, you're about 800 homes all on a coaxial network for the most part. So take the number 3 on the highway, somewhat competing shared bandwidth speed. When you bring fiber optics to the community, everybody has their own dedicated pathway to the network, and it's like 800 things. And then some other benefits of fiber optics is there's some research on out there that has shown to increase home values by about 3.2%. So that's another great selling feature if you're looking to sell your home or for that new construction. That's a great marketing feature.
Now, that number of 800, we don't know that that's the number.
It's not the number.
Okay, you know, probably better.
Several of our neighborhoods already have fiber into right into the building.
But he's talking about bringing that in as well, over
indirectly.
As their contracts get settled or whatever, bought out.
So our contracts we have probably 5 years left on our contract with the fiber right in the buildings already. So we do have fiber in a lot of the community.
Got it. Yeah, it'd be a case-by-case basis probably for some of the sub-associations than for the overall master.
Probably more so the single-family houses. I think most of the condo associations have brought fiber in.
Got it. Well, what I could do is definitely take a look at everything and at least give you the totality of all the different options that you have for those that can do something right now and those that may need to wait. There's different buyout options for a single provider to be able to offer something. I'd be happy to take a look at that.
Now, I have a question on the fiber. We have existing fiber in the buildings now.
Okay.
If you were to take over a contract, do you use their fiber? Can you use their fiber? Do you have to bring your own fiber?
It's possible. I have negotiated in the past. I did a deal, for those that are familiar with Warren's Park over in Naples. They actually had built their own fiber directly to the unit for a lot of their properties. The provider that ended up winning that bid, Hotwire Communications, they ended up leasing the fiber that they had already owned Warren's Park to them. For like $1, and then this way they can maintain it, own it, because they're ultimately responsible for the service. And then at the end of the contract, they have the right to buy it back for $1. So those are things that are on the table. It would say if you do have your own fiber here, this is the community fiber or the service provider's fiber? The CenturyLink. Okay, so that would be an asset in ownership of CenturyLink. So that would be something that the providers would not be able to use. They'd have to build out their own fiber to the unit. And what we're talking about here is fiber to the unit, not just to the building.
So we have fiber to the unit.
Awesome.
Mr. Chairman, just a question for clarification. Is the concept that the district would enter into agreement with this provider and then the district provide the service to the unit?
We haven't even gotten that far. Basically, we want him to come to us with a proposal and let us know what we need to do because he's going to need a bulk provider, you know. So I don't know who that would be with.
There's an attorney general's opinion that says that's not within the scope of the powers for community development.
Okay.
So we would need to look at that. There's an attorney general's opinion from 1996 that has not been changed. The statute's not been changed. That says providing cable TV service to residents of a community development district outside the scope of authority.
So with that in mind,
we need to look at that.
Is that still something we can work with?
I've only seen it one time in the past that I've seen the community district be involved in it. It's uncommon, like you're saying, for that to take place. But it's something that I would explore and see if there is, if it's possible.
Yeah, if you can provide us with the name of that CDD.
Yeah.
It would be helpful because I think the reason that the chairman is advancing the discussion is my understanding is there is no Master Homeowners Association here. So we're kind of trying to learn as we go. The other issue, but if you can reference Mr. Pierce's request and give us some history behind that, the other issue that we might have is that we do not have utility easements across private property that would otherwise give us the ability. And I don't think you want to get into condemnation type issues. And so we need to evaluate our ability to acquire easements across and through private property as part of a bulk service agreement.
I believe right now we have a 6-foot easement between properties, and that was originally established with cable TV.
For utilities or
utilities?
Okay, but then that would be very helpful. But again, that would be something on background that Tony would want to evaluate for us, the existence of valid utility easements.
The 6-foot is limited to the K space, to the finger streets.
Okay.
So it's not a blanket across the entire community.
Okay.
But I think what we need to do is decide, do we want to give him the go-ahead because we know that it can't cost us anything? And I would like Deb to work with him if that would be possible, because she's already been started in on some of this. How does the board feel?
Yes.
Should we make a motion to authorize him?
Yes. I make a motion.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, you have to make that sound like we can't.
Catherine Oswald, Sunset K Lakes. What is the advantage of the CID deciding that they're going to take over our internet and our fiber optics? It's been on Facebook many times, not Facebook, Nextdoor many times, that the district does have the responsibility to provide, and I agree with our attorney. You do not have to supply us with that. It is individual. But I live in a condominium. As this gentleman said, we have separate communities, and to have this fiber optics put in, it's going to screw up all of our master associations.
We're looking into this for information gathering. We haven't made any decisions about anything. We're not telling anybody about what we're going to do.
Is the community going to have a say in this, or is it?
Well, of course you would.
Oh, well, okay.
With that, then, Mr. Chairman, the next item 4, are the minutes of your last regular meeting.
Okay,
that meeting
you.
Occurring in February. Those minutes are behind the next tab in your agenda. This was the board meeting that occurred on February the 17th.
I don't know if any of you folks had time to go through these minutes.
If you would like, since these were actually prepared by Mr. Teague and just recently received, we can defer this until your April meeting when you will also be given today's minutes to review in advance.
Let's do that.
All right, we'll defer and dispense with the minutes and continue those until the April meeting. Again, for purposes of the record, this is the meeting that occurred on February the 17th. Mr. Chairman, I think that takes us down to item 5 today. Typically, this would be Kevin's area, but because I've been involved during this transition period, it's been a very busy 3 weeks for us. And so I'll introduce some of these, but in some cases, I don't have any information. I'm going to defer to Kevin, who's your lead manager here. Quickly, I wanted you to know that we took possession of your assets and your records 3 weeks ago, following your meeting that occurred a month ago that authorized our contract. And so we are now in possession of all of your banking records. The bank resolution has been revised. Signatures have been deleted and added in accordance with your instructions from your last meeting. We have also taken possession of your website and the domain name that is associated with this community. Most importantly, because I'm not personally familiar with Valley Bank, we asked them to confirm that they are what is called a Florida Qualified Public Depositor. That is specifically spelled out in Chapter 280 of the Florida statutes. And certainly, given the anxiety of American banking that's occurred this week, I want you to understand that Florida has a process that if you are holding in trust public money, you have to designate specific collateral and assets on your balance sheet to ensure the public that their tax dollars, in this case non-ad valorem assessments and other revenues, are properly secured. And so we took the liberties Monday to have Valley Bank confirm that they are a Florida qualified depositor, and I want you to know that. I wanted that to be part of the record today. Tony might be able to elaborate on why that's important further, but it essentially ensures that the public for banks in Florida that are holding local government funds, that those are fully collateralized, and there are tests that have to be performed to depict that on the balance sheet, that these collateral items are off to the side so that tax dollars are not at risk. I think that's important for you to understand. In addition, I talked briefly about the website. I have made two notes already today that we will explore going forward. Uploading today's digital recording in its entirety onto the website. For the time being, that we have maintained your pre-existing host vendor, the one that is in Cape Coral that has hosted the website that is here for some time. Kevin and I'm now down to item C. I have ongoing negotiations with two third-party utility billing entities. One of those is a company in North Carolina. The largest one in the country is called Muni, M-U-N-I, billing. They specialize in municipal utility billing services. Their fees are in alignment with the fees that you have paid. A major value-added benefit of this is they have a North Carolina-based national call center. The Monday morning after we were hired, we had 15 calls at our office from this community with different people who have had frustrating issues over billing practices, or what I would call a service request that I need to convey to Mitch, which is, oh my gosh, my water bill is twice what it normally is. And we had 15 calls Monday morning before lunch, people frustrated on the account service side of the utility system here. And so the fact that, for example, Muni Billing has a call center that is North American based and does not rely on third-party contractors in India or Bangladesh or Kathmandu for that reason, I think is a value-added thing that appealed to me. The other entity that we're having some discussions with is Collier County Regional Utilities. Again, because their call center is excellent and it's local, and for convenience purposes, I think residents here will benefit as a result of our utility billing desires going forward. Cal did not bill the most recent bill. He conveyed a digital file to us, and so we had the bills printed and mailed to keep us in sync. I've got the month of March, and I've got until the end of April before we need to have a vendor identified and to keep on schedule. Your assets, though, are considerable, and so if for some reason we're not generating a utility bill in conversations with Steve, it won't be the end of the world. We want to get it right. We want to make sure that there's a improved call center application of what we're going to do. But I wanted you to know those negotiations are well underway.
Just one second. Wasn't Cal going to print those out for us?
He said he'd print them, but he would not.
He did not. We printed them, and we had them bulk mailed through a vendor that we use.
Yeah,
we did get a box of remaining envelopes and things as part of Kevin and I actually went to Fort Myers and picked up two pickup truck loads full of old dead files and other things of that nature, and those are now in a bonded secure warehouse record retention facility, again in Naples as opposed to wherever Cal had them in Lee County.
Now, I called Kevin one day last week and asked about viewing some of those boxes, mm-hmm. because there was assessment methodology done, like, I think in 2006 or 7, and then we did it again just recently, and I wanted to make sure that that was in there.
I'm glad you asked that, because as part of the chain of custody, I asked Cal to prepare an index of materials that we were signing off for, and we received a copy of that. And again, your what I'll call dead files are now in a bonded record retention facility that is in Naples off of Airport Road. They actually have a viewing area there. So to your point, I can make arrangements for members of the board or the board's liaison to go and have those boxes pulled based off of the index and let you physically review everything that we took possession of. It's been about 3 weeks ago.
Okay. That would be great.
And for what little it's worth, I'm not sure what Cal was paying or charging you to store them. I've seen fees as high as $10 a box, but as part of our arrangement, we have a bulk discount there. We pay 75 cents per box per month. So the savings will pass through to the community. I don't look at it as records retention as a profit center. Whatever I'm being charged as dead cost is what you're paying. I don't mark that up at all. So it is a very professional records retention facility, and I'll make arrangements to schedule a time for you to go down and look at anything you want.
Those 40 boxes, how many of them should we be retaining, and how many of them should, I mean, how much of that stuff should have been?
Yeah, Tony will tell you that the Florida records retention procedures are like 380 pages.
Well, that's the QSAT that govern this district. One general standards for local governments, another one is for utilities. There's a different records retention schedule for certain utility records.
As a general rule, miscellaneous correspondence or, for example, invoices need only be kept for 5 to 7 years. And then after that, they're eligible to be discarded. And, in fact, I have to prepare an annual report and submit it to the state of the number of cubic feet of old paper records that we have disposed of in accordance with the rule there. So this will be something, as we have some time and we get into the summer, maybe the early fall, we're going to go down there and pour through this stuff to make sure you're not paying storage fees that you're not required to.
Well, as the last management company, would there be a record of what they have destroyed?
They're required to.
Yeah.
Do you think we got a copy of that?
I don't know, but they would have been required to have been filed with the Secretary of State's office, and so we can make an inquiry as to what the most recent record retention disposal authorizations have been, because they regulate that.
And one of my questions that leads to that is that we've been in this lawsuit over assessments for quite a few years, and it's my understanding once that suit started, none of those records are to be discarded.
They should not have been.
And so I just want to make sure that we didn't.
Again, to your point, I think next week we'll coordinate with you a time. I'll provide you with a copy of the index in advance of what we received.
Okay.
And then we can make arrangements for you to go down at your leisure to review any of the original source documents that we were given.
Thank you.
And one other aspect, there are a number of records that are required to become permanently, and some required to become for extended periods of time. So again, it depends upon the nature of the category of the record. And again, there is a separate standard.
Correct.
Utilities, separate standards.
For example, as the custodian of the records here, that's why I have them in a bonded warehouse that has very good chain of custody procedures. But certain things can never be destroyed. And, for example, the record of proceedings, which is the minutes and the enabling legislation, everything that involved the creation of this, the original bonds, if that's applicable, you can never get rid of those. You have to keep those in perpetuity. And so, to Tony's point, that's an important distinction. Kevin, if you don't mind, I'm going to let you discuss the next issue. This is one involving the mitigation post-hurricane conversations with the Big Cypress Basin Board over your well field.
Thank you. Mr. Truckee and I had a meeting with South Florida Water Management District with Lisa Kohler, who is the basin administrator. Basically, talking about your well grade road and how it was impacted. after the hurricane, as it's impacted through sheet flow of water that's come through after the and possibly as a result of the Everglades restoration project, and then with the point being that we could be eligible for grants to help us as we replace that and make any necessary changes that need to be made. We had a very good meeting, I would say, and obviously Mr. Truckee probably has a lot to say about this, but we're going to have a follow-up meeting with her, and then she wants for us to meet with Commissioner LoCastro and some other officials to see how we can push this forward. So positive movement on that, and anything you'd like to add?
It was nice to set up some relationships with South Florida Water Management and to move forward with that since she's contacted us a couple more times. So we do have that working relationship going. She is going to walk us into our engineers and open some doors for us, which is a wonderful thing of being with the Lord with the different things we're looking at. We have hurricane FEMA grant things that we're working on with the road and some other things we have here. And we have what I would call impact from the restoration project issues that we'll be looking at it before. So it's nice to have that door open. There are more meetings coming up now, and they're planning another one here next week or so. So we'll hear more as those meetings are put together. But it's nice. It was a very positive moment.
Who will be attending those meetings?
That is right now up to the exam. When you meet with the Corps of Engineers, it's going to be limited. It's not going to be open to everyone. There is a meeting coming up that I believe is going to be open to the community in the very near future. Mm-hmm. And that one, I don't have a date on yet, but we'll keep you posted. That was called. That's going to be pretty quick. I would think that would be the next week or so.
Exactly.
You should hear something on a meeting that they're going to invite community, and that'll be with more of a self-talk.
That wouldn't have to be noticed like 7 days in advance or anything?
No, those are staff level meetings as long as they don't include more than one board liaison or designee.
Oh, okay. So only Dan can go?
Dan can go as your either appointed representative or liaison for the board. If two of you were to attend those meetings, then they would need to be noticed accordingly, because then they'd be public meetings.
The first one will be. That's at least we're working on a meeting to invite public and.
So how will these meetings start by now?
I don't know what it's going to be. She said she's going to try to get that together as soon as possible. And I don't know.
That's a meeting.
We'll have to put it on the website or something. Maybe we can get it up on our website. In fact, we'll tell.
Yeah, talk to Kevin or I after the meeting, and we'll make some more definitive arrangements.
Yeah, Neil mentioned that one, two or more board members want to attend that public meeting. I would suggest that it would be a public location. The minutes will need to be taken to be on the state side, because I would be difficult for the board members not to interact with each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be something to bring to Lisa's attention, too. Okay. She may, she's probably pretty familiar with such a long with the preservation board, the subject to it, and what we saw for the preservation board.
Would you expect that type of a meeting to be simulcast or anything, so that, like, I couldn't go there, but I could listen to it? Would you guess?
I wouldn't be opposed to at least taking recordings of that. Whether or not the Basin Board is comfortable, you know, broadcasting what would otherwise be a staff-level type discussion, even if it has a board liaison there, is something we'd need to work out with them. It's not customary.
I think it would be helpful to at least record what you can.
Yeah. I don't think they would be opposed to that, because otherwise the Big Cypress Basin Board functions the same way that we do, or the Board of County Commissioners, or the Governing Board of the South Florida Water Management District in West Florida.
And I'm only saying that because people will
sure
not remember things accurately.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll make that note. The last thing on my report today, just I'll call this miscellaneous correspondence. I want you to know that we are aware of two other issues that affect this community, and I've had some discussions both with the city of Everglades and their county commissioner, and in addition, the county manager's office involving the potential closing of the fire department and station here, and also the potential request for us to consider taking some emergency sewage overflows from the city of Everglades. I can tell you right up front that both Mitch and I have some concern with that. The sewage treatment plant at Everglades has a very long and very poor history of chronic failures and underperformance. I have some concerns given the age of that system that it also has a lot of salt water in it because of groundwater intrusion into the collection system, and salt water wreaks havoc with a biological wastewater treatment plant. The county is currently involved in emergency hauling of raw sewage, 20,000 gallons a day, from Everglades City to the county's south regional plant off of Rattlesnake Hammock Road, and it's very costly. But I wanted you to at least be aware today. I've been contacted by the county. I have not had the chance to talk to the county manager's office. I have in no way expressed that you would consider that unless that you were compensated for it and it was some sort of public safety related issue. At this time and for the foreseeable future, they'll continue to haul that sewage up the trail to Rattlesnake Hammock Road where they're treating it at the county plant.
Just one quick thing. Mitch, do we even have capacity under our permit to do that?
Your plant has capacity. We'd have to ask David. I don't know with the DEP how that would work as a receivership. I'm not sure.
Minimally, some kind of notification to the FDEP would be required. I'm not sure if there would need to be a permit modification. I kind of doubt that, but just some notification.
Short-term emergency, I just wanted you to know that we have been made aware of that and the fact that the city of Everglades has some chronic problems this time of year, every year, and in lieu of dumping partially treated sewage into the Barron River down there, the county is now trucking it back to Naples in order to properly treat it. This other issue with the fire department, there was a meeting yesterday, and I was not a party to that.
Just briefly on the issue of Everglades City. Neil, if there is to be an agreement for the trucking, is it contemplated to be between Collier County and Port of the Islands or Everglades City and Port of the Islands?
My understanding would be Collier County. In the event of a...
Well, the reason I say that is I think y'all know we represent Everglades City, our law firm.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to make sure that everyone's aware of that. I don't see it now. If it's between Collier County and the district, that would not be a conflict of interest. If there is between Everglades City and the district, there would need to be a waiver of conflict of interest for both our firm to represent Everglades City and for the Allen in the transactional aspect of documents. Just want to get that out there.
I know Everglades City has received grants to work on their sewer plant, and they're rebuilding it.
Yes.
As I understand.
They received grant funding. I think they're still under, I think they're still under a consent decree with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection for that plant. They received some funding for designing and constructing a new facility.
Right.
I'm not sure of the status of that. I can, at the next board meeting, bring that forward. And that's all public record.
Yeah, we are not in receipt of a request. But I'm just passing information through that I think is pertinent. I think there was also concern in separate conversations that I've had with county commissioners and the county managers over the potential closing of your fire station. And there was a meeting that was held yesterday. Dan, were you at that meeting?
I was at I spoke with Mayor Grimm from Everglades City yesterday, a meeting with him in the morning. And then I spoke with that kid at the county yesterday, and again just this morning, when I was on the phone this morning here.
Here's what I would want you to know is my board, which is the county considers this a very serious matter, and they would be quick to explore other alternatives. involving separate contracts with other fire districts in order to keep your station open and the station that is on I-75, which is a separate agreement that also receives toll revenue from Alligator Alley in support of that. So they're actually, the history of consolidation or annexation of fire districts here is sort of long. But your current station is under no threat of closure, as I was told yesterday. Negotiations are ongoing, and the county would definitely explore alternatives if they felt that the station was in peril of being closed over just financial issues that they feel strongly about.
So at this time, it's not...
There is no imminent closure that is anticipated. What tripped everybody off, they sent a letter.
Yeah.
And indicated that they intended to abandon the station and serve this community from Isla Capri. And I've got a little bit of coronary artery disease, and so, I mean, if I had a heart attack here today and they were coming from Isla Capri, they'd be better off to call a hearse from the funeral home than send a fire rescue unit from the Isla. It'd take 40 minutes to get here, and so that's ridiculous. But apparently they have resolved the original threatened closure that would have occurred on the 24th, and that negotiations will continue for the foreseeable future.
Do you think that they could possibly be using this as a chip because they're charging us four times as much as everybody else and using this as a chip to keep us in line?
Going way back when I was the county manager, all of the Golden Gate area and all of the Isla Capri area and all of the Ochoapi areas were county fire departments under the Board of County Commissioners. And over time, that's why I said the evolution of consolidation and annexation has resulted in what it is now. But I think there are some very smart people at the county level that are directly involved in this. Both deputy county managers are involved in the negotiations, and I know the city of Everglades feels very strongly about it and would also consider some sort of injunctive relief through the circuit court if they felt that that public safety was at risk. And I don't think we're to any of that yet, but again, I'm just passing some information on to you that has involved your staff here.
So I agree with everything you said. After speaking with the mayor and Everglades City and the county, they were pursuing a new contract that would be long-term. And I think everyone now is looking at a more of a short-term agreement so we get past the deadline date. And then that'll give us some time to negotiate a longer-term settlement to this. So I think they've pretty much given that they're going to carry this through past the contract date, make sure it happens, and give us more time to negotiate the large-scale result of it. So as far as our fire station closing, I don't think it's going to happen. There's no guarantee. I can't say it is not. But from everyone I talk to, they're not going to let that happen. So
hopefully that won't go to next door and get everybody worked up that this is going to happen.
Well, last meeting, Mr. Truckee assured us that station was not going to close.
There you go.
Okay.
Now, one of the points on that, I think it might be beneficial to our future county commissioners, Commissioner Castro is Port Allen, Commissioner Daniels at Everglades City, so hopefully that will be a benefit.
It is, and that's why two deputy county managers are working on the resolution of this. I mean, the staff is fully aware that this thing needs to be fixed.
Russ, you got something?
Yeah, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to the wastewater from Everglades City. What do we produce per day that you're treating, rough and tough?
100 to 150. Roughly 100,000
a day. Okay, so they're moving 20. Can you, and my concern is there's already got to be history with the rattlesnake plant because they've been treating the water. Can you talk to them and just see if there's any detrimental effects from that they've been experiencing?
Sure, I can ask. And if it was my preference, I wouldn't want to take it, but if it's the board that...
Oh, no, I'm not saying I want to take it. You just never know how the negotiations are going
to go. And if we were to take it, I would suggest that we ask to take everything from Copeland, because that's not on the island, but that is part of Everglades City sewage. I don't know that they produce 20,000 gallons a day, but I would assume pretty close to it. Maybe that would be a better option. And then you have all the factors of the truck that's hauling it. Did he pump two septics before he went and filled up at Everglades City? And are you getting that as well? So there's a lot of stuff that...
Okay. Maybe you could find out what kind of money they're paying, too, because unless this was a boatload of money, I can't imagine that we would have any interest in it.
Well, one of the big differences is the South County plant is a lot bigger than our plant, so the impact of salt water to our plant is felt a whole lot more than what it would be at the South County plant.
Well, Mitch and I have some experience with salt water and the biological effects that causes a healthy plant. And we're not compelled to take it. This is the main thing I want you to know. I'm trying to pass along information so that you're properly informed. In the event of an emergency declaration by DEP, it is the general purpose government that this responsibility would default to. And in this case, that's the Board of County Commissioners. And so that's why the trucks are running up and down the road here every day. They're under an emergency condition. And they are exploring alternatives in order to limit their financial exposure, and at this point, that's all that's been said. Mm-hmm. Mitch and I both have operating concerns that would we don't want to do anything that's going to affect the biological efficiency of your plant, and we, you know, we can chase some of the financial aspects of it and avoid the costs and things like that, but that's really all I want you to know.
So that is totally free then to Everglades City?
I'm sorry?
That is free to Everglades City? They're not paying for that?
I don't know that, so I mean,
we can try to find out. Also, the plant is under construction. I'm not sure of the exact stage of construction, but I was just advised it's under construction. So I don't know if that came up in the conversation.
It did not. And I don't know what the construction period is. I do know that that plant has underperformed for 20 years.
When you put a sewer plant in the middle of 4 feet above sea level surrounded by salt water, that's your college.
And the issue there is the gravity system was constructed 80 years ago, and with every high tide, the groundwater is full of salt water, and that's why I know that the salt water gets into the gravity sewers, and then by the time it gets to the plant, it causes the operator's problem. That's really all that I or Kevin had today. There are two other staff items. Item six today would be your monthly utility operating report. Mr. Gilbert is here. I don't know typically the highlights or parameters.
Well, before we go to that, can we catch this assessment roll?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I skipped over that. I just wanted you to know we've also made some progress. Again, as part of my scope of services and contract with you, I identify and we outsource at cost the annual maintenance associated with your assessment role. And it has to be maintained monthly so that as property changes hands, it has to be in a format that can be uploaded to the property appraiser so that he can merge it with the tax collector onto the tax bill. That's well underway. Historically, I have used a sub-consultant here in Naples, AJC and Associates. For 20 years, they also maintain the role for the county, for the Pelican Bay District. The current arrangement that we have, we acquired the digital file from Mr. Teague, and we will put into place daily or monthly maintenance as required so that it is current with respect to current ownership. And believe it or not, there's a lot of property changing hands here.
Yeah.
And that also affects the utility operations. I just sort of passed over that, but it's well underway.
When would you expect that we would start looking at that for the 23, for next year's budget?
The deadlines for the transmittal of the role, I think, are September the 1st.
Okay.
So any renewal of that for the fiscal 24 year will come up as part of your budget deliberations that will start here in May.
May?
I want to share with you a preliminary or tentative budget in May so that you can kind of workshop it here. I have to provide a copy of the tentative budget to the county in accordance with the Florida law in June by the 15th. And then you have to actually conduct no later than August a public hearing to formally adopt the budget so that it can be in the property appraiser's hands by September the 1st.
Great. That answers my question.
Thank you. And again, I'm sorry for over.
It's okay.
Mitch?
Yep. Hello, everyone. Wastewater plant this month, no issues. We met all of our requirements. The water plant is the same. The reuse station at the plant, the pumps, everything is good. The one over here on the canal, it's not communicating, which we spoke about, you guys are aware of. We did have a failure on the generator starter, so I assume that's something you want me to have replaced, even though we've been having issues with the generator. I'm going to guess it's $500 to $1,000 to replace that starter.
Do we even need to do a motion on that?
My contract gives me the authority to coordinate that sort of thing. We don't need a formal action on that, and I'll talk to Mitch after the
okay.
meeting. For something that's a routine maintenance item, you need not have to vote on that
okay.
separately.
You're done.
Our flows on the wastewater plant were $2.4 million, and we're just a little less than that, $2.2 million on the water. So that's actually opposite of what it normally is. So I have the company coming out to recalibrate the meters. We're still within our calibration period, but it's kind of an indication we had an issue. We sent out a little over $7 million, or $7.5 million in irrigation. No breakdowns at the plant. Everything's working fine. We replaced the three culverts on the well road that were washed out during the hurricane. That's really it. After the last meeting, David's office coordinated with us to come out and do the inspection of the plant for the permit renewal. So we're working with them and Omar Rodriguez on that.
You're almost done with the generator plant out at the wells?
Yeah, everything's done. We're waiting for the startup, which I think they have scheduled in 2 weeks from the distributor of the generator.
Okay.
So we can't do a startup without him.
Could you
keep our warranty?
Do me a favor and... Yeah. Get some padlocks on some of that
yes,
stuff?
Yes, we'll lock it up. Dan spoke to me yesterday.
Okay.
So we'll get the form boards down and the gravel around and get it locked
Thank
up.
You.
Yes.
Did,
yeah.
did we get the gravel on either end of the road yet? Where did you put the extra
we had it there, but we used it during the when we were replacing the culverts, so we have more coming.
Oh, okay.
And I spoke with a meter manufacturer. We are AMR only. We're not equipped for AMI, which is what I thought. So.
Okay.
One other question. A while back there, we had that water leak across from Orchid Cove there. And
yes.
I'm just curious, how much water went through that?
So I don't know how much water went through it. We repaired it. It's a one-inch line. It ran a big part of the day. If I were to guess, 10,000 gallons maybe.
Oh, you think it only went one day?
Oh, yes. I got 30 phone calls in a very short period.
Okay.
So it was gushing up in the air, so it was only one bit.
Okay.
Could that have affected your numbers? You said that was opposite.
Yeah, it was opposite. I had more wastewater than water. And that will happen sometimes in rainy season if you have infiltration, but we're in the middle of dry season. So that should have actually helped me to level those out, and they didn't. So
somebody will come out and try
and they calibrate it every year, so they'll come out and check and let us know if a meter's bad.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
I'd like to thank Mitch for his open house.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Wonderful.
For what it's worth, first impressions, you got a good operator here. And we met some of the key staff, but Mitch came out of his way to come down here and provide us a separate overview. And I think if you don't mind, it would at least be nice to have a motion and second and vote to accept the utility report on today's agenda. If somebody's willing to make that motion.
We make a motion, we accept.
Sure, second.
All in favor?
All right.
Aye.
Thank you. Mitch, you're free to go too, buddy. You've got to go where we're living, but we understand. The next staff item is the district engineer. If you'll turn to the next tab in your agenda materials today, there is a very important issue I don't have any history on, but I have read through the proposal as it pertains to a new multi-use water storage tank. I'm quite sure that this board is familiar with that. But Dave, if you would outline that in addition to anything else that's on your report today.
Okay, great. The proposal is in your packet, and it's for the design, bidding, and construction assistance for a new water tank at the treatment plant itself. Initially, it would be used for potable water. As we prepare the existing water tank, there's some roof repairs that are needed there, and along with some general maintenance of the existing water tank. Once those repairs are done, we would convert it over to assist us with the fire irrigation system to give us a little more capacity on that system, which is indicated that would be very helpful for the overall system. The other thing that would allow us to do, too, is there is some additional maintenance work that's needed on the existing fire irrigation tank, the metal tank, and that would give us a chance to switch tanks around a little bit and be able to get those repairs done timely. Again, our proposal includes, you know, doing some initial site work. We've got included in there some subsurface utility exploration where we'd be doing some ground penetrating radar and so forth, soft digs, to just verify where some of the connection points are that we'll need to use for piping. And then also we'll have a geotechnical firm come on out. They do a couple of borings at the site itself to determine what the safe soil bearing pressures are for the new tank. Then from there we'll do engineering design. Actually, we'll have a survey in there. And that's just to locate everything that's out on the site that's pertinent to this project. From there, we'll go into engineering design and plans. We'll go ahead and work up to about 60% plans. We'll present that to your board liaison and review that, do some tweaking. And we'll utilize those plans to start our permitting efforts. And then as permitting goes on, we'll go ahead and refine those into 90% plans and specifications.
Let me break in there. Okay, I see this is $115,000 for that. Do we need to get three bids and whatnot for that to do this?
No, it's under the threshold for requirements for
Does the board,
but it might be a good idea.
Does the board want to look at alternatives?
And then the other question that I have, was this specifically budgeted as part of your fiscal year 23 adopted budget, or would this also require budget amendment?
I believe it was it not? Do you remember?
There was $360,000 budgeted for engineering, but I thought it was surveying and stuff like that. I don't think it
that was more of drainage.
Drainage, yeah.
Well, that's something that, I mean, if you want to continue this for 1 month, just in order for me to evaluate the proposal that was just received and also the budget implications, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that as part of any authorization to proceed, you might need a budget amendment after I've had a chance to look at the budget.
What do you think, Mitch? Is it okay if you take another month?
This is for a new tank.
New tank and refurbishing the other one.
Correct.
And this is just the logistics. This is just the...
Yes, to get to a point where we can actually see it through the construction per se. The construction budget would probably be about $750,000 for all the work that's associated with that.
And this eliminates that pump station.
Yes.
And that would have been how much?
That went anywhere from $200,000 or $300,000 to $1 million.
Just for the pump station.
How in depth you wanted to repair that?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So it's a wash.
And you're still right.
It's a wash. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, 113, you don't need to include the proposal or if you wish to engage the services of another engineer, then you need to go to competitive consultant negotiation that process, which again requires solicitation that's not the event qualification that you would negotiate with that firm. So that would put you out probably 45 to 60 days. So I think in the instructions would need to have to be solicited because it's 750.
Either way, that's got to be
solicited.
Yeah. And that's what I'm asking the board. How do you feel about it? Do you want to have whole Montez do it, or do you want to just... I mean, do you want to look further, or do you want to wait for another month and give Neil and Kevin a chance to look?
Let Neil look at it.
My recommendation today, there are 9 different tasks that are outlined here, and if you want to at least authorize the initial preliminary task, and the fee associated with that is an amount not to exceed $4,000, let's get this on his production schedule. Give me an opportunity to look at the budget implications of this for both the design and the permitting, but then the construction. I just need to reconcile this in my mind. But that, my recommendation today would be to review the proposal to authorize specifically task number one, and for me to report further at your April meeting.
So
I
want to make a motion.
I got one question. This has nothing to do with affecting the permit process that you're doing.
No effect on the permitting process.
Yeah, my understanding is general consultation for a routine, you know, permit renewal to McMahon.
Okay, the motion's been made to authorize Dave to do this step one process not to exceed $4,000. All in favor?
Aye.
And I'm sorry, who made the second? Mr. Truckee.
We had some discussion on this. David was mentioning the preparing the book on that tank.
I don't know if that tank, if it's going to be changed to irrigation water, does it need a roof? Since currently we have one tank that is irrigation water with a roof and one tank that's irrigation water without a roof. So that was my question.
Well, the fact we've been using it as a swing tank for potable water use, I would recommend that we go ahead and roof it.
Structurally, doesn't that affect it? It's a roofer. Doesn't it have a roof?
I don't think so. I've been involved with a lot of those Florida Aqua Store tanks, and it doesn't matter either way.
Right.
I'm no engineer, and they would have to tell you that, but yeah. The one that I've been experienced with, we took roofs off and left them open in the past.
I wonder how much money that would involve, with or without.
I have to do some research or do some checking.
I did put a roof on a tank similar in size in Bonita, Florida Aqua Store, and their price was $130,000.
So it's not quite okay. That much. So,
but we wouldn't have the ability to
have
use that
brand new in the top ring.
And then we would, if we didn't do it, we wouldn't have the option of using that for fresh water switch over if we needed it as an emergency.
How would that work, David? So if we switched it back to potable, we would just chlorinate it, pull back keys, and then we could use it for potable?
Right, and we would have some backflow prevention connection devices too that we could do a physical separation as far as taking a piece of pipe out that it's, there's no way that it can cross-connect.
Got it.
Okay. David, anything else?
Yeah, I've got several other things. Mitch did mention the fact we are working on a permit renewal, and we've got an on-site meeting that's being scheduled with Mitch to do a walkthrough of the facility. And as part of that, we'll be doing the performance and basically a performance and operation type permit. Report. The other thing that we're working on right now is the capacity analysis report, where we'll be taking the data of how what the plant flows are and parameters and so forth and preparing a capacity analysis report also. So that's underway right now. The other two things I have are more informational type items. There was a question at the last board meeting concerning roadways and so forth. And let me pass these around. And what this basically does is just talk a little bit about how the different roadways in the community have been dedicated over to the community itself. Union Road from US 41 North, pretty much ending at the old hotel site, it's contained in the documents recorded in a specific book, RO book and page. The northward part is also another second document. I did not include that particular document in this package. For Newport Drive, US 41 South to the Phase 1 line, that's conveyed by, a separate document in OR Book 1567. And then on the south side of that, the Case Phase 1 plat covers the dedication of Newport Drive, Morningstar K, and then also Newport K.
What did you mean by conveyed to us?
Or conveyed, or recorded, let's put it that way. Yeah.
Recording, saying that...
As far as it's used for the public, that's how it's
described. Okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah. On the northern part of Newport Drive. There are a couple of drainage ways that go from the roadway right away all the way out to the canal. One of them, we've been able to find some documentation of recorded easement per se. There are a couple other ones that seem to be absent of some kind of dedication at this point, but they've been in use probably since the mid-80s and so forth. So it is what we've got right now.
When you say absence of dedication, that means that the DID is not responsible for it?
The fact that it drains your road right away, I would assume there's some responsibility for that drainage system.
You know, is that a gray area?
I'm confused. Another reason. Number one, the dedication is typically deemed as easement absent and specific intent to grant general on fee simple. There's constant forward. If you own all the bundles rights, you have fee simple title. And if an easement is granted in favor of another party, an easement holder is called a dominant estate. And the underlying piece of loan or subservient state, the dominant state holder, can utilize it for the purposes outlined in the easement. So, for example, in the phase two, the fact deed, like in David, is dedicated to the CID, is not a road like the one. So, it means that they may not own the underlying piece, but the dominant state district operates and owns it as a road. The drainage part you're talking about, David, is where?
It's on Newport Drive, the northern portion, and that's the one that's described in, it's the first one, I believe.
Phase 1 plat?
No, it's not the Phase 1 plat. It's the one that's described in OR Book 1567, page 1549. It's on the cover, on the email.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, that's the one that there's a couple of drainage pipes and so forth that aren't identified specifically anywhere that I can find.
There are a number of legal descriptions in there. For example, water treatment facility easement, proposed entrance road easement, and proposed service road easement. If that's the instrument that 1567-1549. So, where is the legal description for the district owns the described lands in fee simple under the deed? Right. I'm sorry, I haven't seen this. Well,
I may not have that.
The district owns all these areas in fee simple. Okay. So the drainage area is where? I'm trying to understand.
I may not have that particular document included in here. 1144, page 1195. But it does show on the phase one plat a reference to it.
I figure it was made. Okay, I see the first page of the phase one plat.
And I got something highlighted there.
Roadway easement. And so that's an easement for vehicular and pedestrian ingress and egress, ES 41. That's what that is for. And so I guess the question was, does that provide for drainage? Is that one of the questions or not?
I'm not sure I was able to find that particular document when I went on a search.
And that's what we're trying to get at. We'd like to have some of this stuff put to bed. Because we've been doing this forever.
Right.
And
what I can do,
I looked at this stuff as well, and I didn't see where there was drainage in any of in a lot of this. So what we need to know is, are we responsible for these drainage areas? And if not, who is and so forth?
Yeah, that's right. Before, you know, we can identify, we can say, on my purposes, indicate and state these drainage areas. I think that's important to know. And that way we can ascertain, I can do either property information reports, and they would articulate what easements or other items are of record that encumber that property to show if the district has any drainage easement or dedicated easements for drainage over certain properties. So that's the important. Are we talking roadways primarily, or are we talking other areas?
Well, I mean, I have five questions on that.
Yeah. Well, my thought was,
what are easements? What is enforceable by us, and what is not? And if we don't have any enforcement responsibilities, who does? And who reported it?
If the district is a grantee under grant of easement, then the district has a right to engage in the activities authorized by the grant of easement. So if the district has an easement for drainage, and the district can operate, maintain, or own the drainage improvement facilities in those easements.
Are you saying you can't hear?
No, I have a question.
So, in other words,
Well, the question becomes whether or not the district has an easement for your square located.
So it's all about, well, what's the enforcement for that?
Enforcement point. Assuming for sake of discussion, that the district has a 15-foot drainage easement off of a road easement, road right-of-way. And so the district has that easement. If someone fills in the swale without the district's consent, in my opinion, they're interfering with the district's easement and preventing the district's easement from being used for its intended purpose. And so the district could require removal of that as being interference with the easement.
So, and how do we enforce that?
You can either ask the code enforcement, if code enforcement is applying to treat that as part of the building permit, or go to court for injunctive relief or prevent the continued utilization of the district easement contrary to the district's use of it and require restoration.
See, one of the things I'm looking at is for Sanctuary Point, for instance. And what I could get out of this information, we have the swale that goes down to the overflow thing, like that on George Mess's property that we've been discussing forever. So we've got those on the end of all four of them, and then we have two cross street laterals. I don't come up with anything anywhere else that says that we have a easement in those folks' backyards. And if we do, where they are or anything else. And that's what I'm trying to get to. What's the definitive answer? And it needs to be in writing someplace because we can't keep going.
Again, the only way to really ascertain what encumbrances of the property are on a partial land, the easiest, least expensive way is to do a property information report where it would show who owns the property, what encumbrances exist, and would list the official records, book, and page, and provide a copy of those as to those properties. So if the district wants that answer for particular parcels, I would need to know the parcel ID number. That way I can order it through what's called Fidelity National Chicago Title. They have a plant, a title plant, and they research the documents. And that's a relatively expensive process.
So we would have to do that for every property?
Every property where there are questions.
I'm sorry?
We just did it for a few of them.
For those that we do not know.
You only did a couple of you, probably.
Okay. All right.
I don't know whether this other packet I've got here will confuse us or help clarify some things, but this is a package I put together that talks about some of the drainage and roadway right-of-ways and maybe some history, too, that's associated with that. There were some subsequent agreements with inside some of the communities when we started the fire irrigation system, it supplemented it. So there are some other agreements there. Page 2 of that document, there is one correction on it. Sunset K, I listed underneath that the roadway was part of the master association, but it was subsequently given to the CID by another document.
Yeah, I caught that too.
So there is a correction there.
Okay, I got a question. I was looking at the last board meeting. You did all this because of what we requested with GIS? That was part of that request?
No, not the GIS. This was something else that was asked for during the meeting. And a lot of this information I had already gathered and so forth, so it was just a matter of reissuing it, sending it back out to you all.
But I think we always thought that this was going to be taken care of with GIS. That was the assumption. So we're not even close.
And since we had that last meeting with the fellow from the GIS that was going to send us all the ability to, you know, to actually look into it and whatnot, as far as I know, he never did any of that stuff.
To help a little bit on that Sanctuary Point question, if you look on the plat for Phase 2 underneath the dedications, It's the third paragraph. Mm-hmm. Where it does talk about those easements on those certain lots and so forth. And it does
fourth paragraph.
Fourth paragraph. Third.
It's actually the second dedication.
Yeah, the second dedication, yes. But there it talks about the maintenance to the going to the CID, basically.
The swales?
Yes.
No, there's drainage easements between running along and abutting common lot lines at certain sites. And that's where they're going, for example, between lots 76 and 77.
Yeah,
89.
Yeah, that's those lateral.
Those are the lateral.
Those drainage easements have been dedicated to the district on that path.
Yes.
So you have to look at the numbers to see. The easement you're talking about is these cases to reflection lots.
Okay.
The back of the properties are the scale that runs along the back.
And that's mentioned too there.
The reflection lots. So the question is, in all these properties, do we have easements
in the rear? Yeah.
By the riprap in the rear.
Yeah, it does mention the 20-foot easement back there.
Yeah, 20-foot wide easement, strip of land, the second paragraph. Okay. A 20-foot wide strip of land at the rear of lots 4 through 92.
But it doesn't designate where that 20-foot starts and stops either, because a lot of people are saying, my easements are out in the water.
It says it's the rear, so I wouldn't interpret that.
Okay.
Doing the side of the line, I don't like to do this. I would interpret that that would take it from the lot line in 20 feet. Wherever that land is, wherever that land is. Some of the easements may be in the water. Okay, but again, because this 20 foot is here, so it's 20 feet into the rear lot line.
Well, then we've got a lot of houses that are in there, in an easement.
Yeah. This is a little bit deal. I understand. But that's just dedicated. Unless it's been vacated today
or night. No, there's not been vacated. Now, there was an issue that came up with two of the laterals.
It's dedicated to the district and the entire county. So there's two entities that have the drainage for 24 wide strip of land at the rear of lot 4 through 92. And so, arguably, if you're certain that, again,
that's all.
They're going to 28. Mm-hmm. That's one. Is there any contrary argument in the past about that?
No, not really. Not really.
Well, didn't you have that problem over on 199 Case Drive?
Well, as mentioned, a lot of these easements are actually in the water themselves because the property line has been interpreted as being the mean high water level, which puts the easement further out of the water.
But what he's just saying is that it's the actual property.
So it's in the rear.
Huh?
Yeah, it's in the rear of lot 4 through 92. And lots are, we have defined described lots. Anytime any water line falls outside some of the described defined lots.
There is a legal interpretation, but there's a mathematical closure line that's included with that plat. And it's just a closure type line for the plat itself. But my interpretation has been that the property line is actually being high water.
Okay. I'm looking at, by way of example, I'm looking at the little insert, the detail of these measures one. And that's, by the way, it's a sure way of having me visit the autonomous facility. Last book, 21 pages. By the way, I would suggest also at the end of the day that I give Chairman David and Kevin Reveal to come back with the recommendation for the board, as opposed to doing it on the fly.
Yes.
But if you look at the detail of easement, and it's each lot, and it talks about it, and it has 20 foot DD, it does not represent any mean high water line.
But the plat itself shows that property going out to the mean high water level, and there's witness pins that are set on the upland side.
That's your question, because the plat and lot lines appear to be at times inside, they'll call it, the mean high water line. The other side of the plat and lot line. We need to have something.
Yeah, we need to.
But yeah. For example, the lots are pretty uniform as far as their dimensions and shape or rectangular. then you have a separate description for the Neon water line that appears to be outside the planted lot.
Yeah, each lot is different. Would that mean what?
Again, it appears the Neon water line is outside the described planted lot.
In theory, if that's correct, every one of those lots worth 20 foot easement and on land is exactly.
I don't know where it is on land, but it's in the rear of the lot.
I don't know the water line is elsewhere.
Wait, change. This is the Mihawk water line from out of the flat.
Yes.
Oh, God.
So, do you
that's the number of changes.
Yeah, to get together between now and the next meeting and come up with
it. Again, my first officer talked to the opinion is that it says the lot. It has the detail, says the lot. The lot details were explained for the east part. It does not include any reference to the Mihawk water line. It doesn't say 20 feet of rear. Inside we have water line, outside we have water line, just as you know, we want. And it's detailed, it qualifies even further. That is a lot.
So, in your estimation then, do you think that the CID has an easement in the back there? I've also saw where it says that the homeowners are responsible to maintain those. And no government entity can be asked to maintain those?
I think that what you're referencing is something that's in the covenant, perhaps.
Okay. Which are probably not enforceable anymore either, because there's no HOA.
That's a question for Tony.
Well, I'm not going to get involved in enforcement of private deeds. That's not just a contractual matter. Existence of the lack of existence of.
No, we're just trying to figure out.
That's a private contractual matter of the property.
We're just trying to figure out whether or not we're responsible to pay for all the seeing of this stuff, or if it's on the homeowner. Okay. That's what we're trying to.
I just ask. We also want to take a look at sunset where the culverts are going. Do we have the there through any regulations?
On Sunset K, there is an issue with where the drainage easement was platted and where the drainage pipe actually got installed. They're one lot off. So we did do a survey. We did get things prepared where we've got legal descriptions and sketches for replacement easements for those. And that's where we've kind of stopped right now, waiting on board direction if you want to go ahead and request replacement easements from those property owners to right the situation.
Well, again, for those property owners also, you may want to make the vacation of the easement along the line where the pipes are not located.
Where, what does that mean?
Right. You have to go to the county commission and the district is ultimately approved to vacate that so people can then utilize that. Yeah. Here we go.
Basically, we give back what
we didn't use.
Well, we didn't
take the easement off.
What the thing of it is, we're going to be asking that homeowner, especially that one that's that you're talking about there, where he owns two lots, we're going to be asking him to give us a 20-foot easement through the middle of this property.
Right.
Why would he do that?
Right.
It was just something that came up several months ago and
yep.
It didn't clean up.
Yep.
Any questions on Newport and Sunrise Cave?
That would be Lisa.
You looked at it. Did you drive around today and look at
125?
Yeah, I did. And it looks like the construction is in accordance with the sketch that we had for the drainage.
It is?
Yes.
Just 5 feet?
Well, the pipe's a little bit long. It needs to be trimmed off. There's some remedial work that still needs to be done, like the swales will need to be reestablished going into the culverts and so forth because they did match up with existing culverts. The existing swales have filled in somewhat, so there is going to need to be some regrading by the property owner to make sure things work.
And is there enough room between where that driveway is to put that slope down like that you spoke
yes,
of?
There should be. There should be.
So we'll wait till it's finished and look at it again?
Yes.
Okay.
So work underway.
Yeah, this is a very, I just don't want to get back into another one of these situations where after it's done, and now we're going to go back and try to unravel this thing.
Right. No, it should be able to work. We may have to, the one on Martin's Torquay, where it goes down and matches up with the existing culvert that's already crossing there, we may need to do some modification of that particular miter end section.
Yeah, there's no room for the miter there.
So we'll have to look and see what we need to do. We may need to put a head wall or something there too.
Well, now's the time we have to get that.
I'll revisit that one before I leave here today.
He's putting his pavers in as we speak.
Yes.
Okay.
So Tony and David are going to get together between now and the next meeting.
Yes, because and Kevin also. I think because some of the confusion is you have the detail over here. I think it's pretty clear on page 3 of platform 21 that shows the drainage easement. And it does not show the mean high water line or any meandering line. Then you have the note, and I think this is what Dave was saying, it says side lot dimensions are to the W&A meander line, which means the side lot dimensions are there, but they do have to find the rear lot. Mm-hmm. So it's
And individual property owners, when they had surveys done, were seeing a mixed match of both?
Yes.
Some just to the...
And that's our fault because we're not giving them a definitive answer.
Some just to the planted rear lot line and some to the mean-high water line?
Yes.
But that was the mean-high water line back in 1990, which seems changed.
That's why you see the plus or minus with the witness bins.
Okay.
My note is...
We
got it.
They're going to get together, then they'll know where we're going to stand as far as you answered the question on enforcement.
That's
the reason I asked that is because you've got people in the community that are accusing us of not enforcing
things,
but we don't know what we're supposed to enforce.
Yeah, one way of enforcement, as the board did earlier, with regard to notifying code enforcement, if there is an issue about the building, or if there isn't any, that might be it.
Well, yeah.
Do you want to bring that up, or do you want to wait?
Oh, I'll bring that up now. Do you want me
to? Let's just get it
down. An email was received. It went to all the board members, to myself, I think Neil and Kevin also, from a resident, and the heading was hate crimes and building code violations. And in essence, it said that an individual in the community had probably made a reference to a complaint to code enforcement, and that person has been apparently chastised, criticized, and or assertions as to being verbally harassed or abused. I'm not sure if it wasn't clear whether it was on social media or while taking walks or like, I have no idea. But the request was that the board needs to stop hate crimes, but I don't know how about anyone stops hate crimes, number one. So, assuming it is, I don't even know the definition of hate crimes is anymore, quite frankly. There's called the First Amendment, the ability to
terrorize
themselves. I'm sorry?
Or terrorizing, she said.
Yeah.
She's been terrorized.
And so I guess the upshot was for the board to, when the board is aware of issues when codes are being violated or district interests are being affected adversely without the approval of the district, that the district should take necessary enforcement action. So I think that's the ultimate request. So that if the board is aware of someone interfering with the district easement, filling in a swale, that the district has a drainage easement, that the board should take whatever actions is necessary. And the board has in the past done that with the code enforcement referral. And the board also has the ability, in addition to the code enforcement referral, to issue, when the board did do that, cease and desist, and then the board can follow that up with litigation as appropriate to enforce its easement right. And that's our case by case basis.
She's basically saying that the board is in jeopardy because we're not enforcing this stuff. And basically what it says is that we're supposed to, whenever we see a Collier County code violation, we are mandated to bring that to the county's attention.
Yeah, now the difference between code violations that involve district property and just code violations generally, the district... In my humble opinion, the CG has no obligation to inform the Cuyahoga County or any other agency of code violations that do not involve district property or district interest. If there is a violation of a code that has an adverse impact on a district asset or facility, then I think the district has the right and probably the obligation
to utilize all available mechanisms. For example, if someone was to see discharge or somebody dumping water inappropriately or toxic chemicals on the district right away, then the county, the district has, I think, an obligation to take whatever actions are appropriate, legal action. If it is on someone else's property where the district does not have any interest in engaging in activity that doesn't affect the district property, I don't see an obligation on the part of the district.
Like somebody parks a boat trailer on their yard. That are we as a board member supposed to call the county out?
In my opinion, that is not a district obligation.
How about somebody speeding down the street? Or using the canal?
Districts do not have traffic law enforcement authority.
Okay.
That's very clear. There's a couple AGOs that say that.
The hate crime should be referred to the sheriff.
If there's a belief that there's a violation of criminal laws involving someone allegedly engaging in harassment, stalking, cyber stalking, hate crime, that's something only law enforcement can handle.
But that's not for us to fully correct.
We don't have that.
Okay.
Okay. You have no, and here's the issue. Under Florida law, if you have no duty, you have no liability. If you have no duty and you take on a duty, you have liability for making sure you don't screw up. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the old approach is if you're walking along a road and you cross a creek or canal, you're on a bridge, you see some person flailing in the water drowning, you have no obligation or no duty to help save that person. But if you try to help save that person, you better do it right. Because if you jump in and land on their head and make them drown, then you are liable. I mean, that's just kind of a gross oversimplification. But if you have a duty, you need to act to try to minimize liability. If you have no duty, you don't have liability. If you have no duty but take on the duty, then you have liability to make sure it's done right. That's sort of in a nutshell, without getting into all the other permutations on that thing.
And we're seeing all kinds of inner fighting between neighbors in here, and they think that the CID needs to get involved in all that, and we're saying we have better things to do.
Yes, the district has basic infrastructure to operate, support, operate, and maintain water, wastewater, drainage, as far as where the district has drainage facilities, and roads that are district roads.
In a nutshell,
your building permit authority.
In a nutshell, we're in the public works business, and right. We don't have any ability to enforce traffic, deed restrictions, or disputes of any nature with
that. Unless they adversely affect or impact.
Correct.
Specifically. So I'll give you another
safeguard example. The community.
Yeah, another example. Years ago, one of my CDDs is located, the developer built in your landfill. Huge. And the landfill was in the process of sort of closing down, but not really closing down. New residents were moving into the borders of the CDD, and why the district to take action when there was a discussion about expanding areas of the landfill. I said, so what are the impacts on the district's assets? Is the groundwater discharge or coming down groundwater of leachate and stuff like that that's getting into the district's wells? Well, we have no proof of that. Why would they... They're running up and down the road. Who owns the road? The developer. Okay. So they said, well, it's going to create noise and air pollution. I said, what district aspects are impacted? And so it was really difficult. Finally, we came across one where there may have been surface water flow into the district's lakes. And so that way, that district was able to intervene in a permitting process. But absent that, all those other areas were outside the purview of the district. And they couldn't participate.
And the same applies here.
Yeah, and see, our community development district is a special, limited purpose form of local government. It has no home rule power. That's sort of a fundamental.
Just to interject, Dave, did you have anything further?
No, nothing.
Tony, did you have anything further for the board today?
No, I'm trying to chat with you and the chairman afterwards.
We'll do that. Then, Mr. Chairman, that takes us down, I believe, to item 9A, which was added today. And I think someone has left a separate exhibit.
That's for Bruce over here.
This is the issue pertaining to the fence.
Venus K.
Yeah, you want to introduce that?
Bruce got a hold of me, and in the past, he asked for a variance from the board to put in a safety fence on the two sides of his property in lieu of him putting a safety fence around his pool. And he sent me these drawings and whatnot, and he would like the board to relook at this, correct?
Correct.
You've all got a copy of it?
As our attorney, do you have an opinion on this?
Look, I think the discussion earlier was, I can't recall all the details, but this is the same property, was the district has the ability for worship to approve, it's called like a non-disturbance encroachment agreement, county's transition to an easement use agreement. I prefer the non-disturbance encroachment agreement, that if the board, and the board has discretion, the board believes that the granting of the ability to have the property owner place a fence in the locations indicated would not interfere with the district's ability to operate and maintain any district infrastructure facilities in the area of the easements or any other district assets. The board has the ability to authorize the preparation and come back to the board with a specific non-disturbance encroachment agreement that basically says, okay, you property owner, have made this request, you have given us detailed plans, we will authorize you, we the board authorize you to construct, describe the facilities in great detail, within the locations described in great detail, and upon the following conditions, that if in the future the district believes in its sole discretion that these facilities, improvements, fencing, etc., interfere with the district's ability to operate, maintain its facilities, etc., the district will can notify you and you have X number of days to remove it at your expense. If you don't, the district has the right to remove it at no expense, at your expense. No liability to the district. In an emergency situation, district will give expedited notice, the district can remove it and at your expense. And again, the property owner holds the district harmless from that. And we've done that in a number of communities, Neil and Paul Kamarsh, we've done that a few times. And so it's up to the board to make a determination as to whether or not they believe it's appropriate in this instance to allow this person to utilize it. One of the interesting examples in Pelican Marsh, years ago, the district did not know a property owner there, did not want to close their pool, and without coming to the CBD, the property owner had run into the lake offered by the district fencing until the district lawnmower operator was trying to go around. And so we resolved that. The county now requires this agreement when there's any improvements in the easement. In the past, the county was not paying any attention. About 3 years ago, the county changed the code to require the attention letters of the county. So if the board is so inclined, when the direct staff is prepared the necessary instruments, and the question becomes, does the board want the property owner to pay it? Usually it might be less than $200. There needs to be, and I go back and forth with them all the time, the property owner has the level of detail that I believe is necessary, and then the property owner pays the court to be all.
Okay.
So,
do they get the court in public?
Do you want the input from the two adjoining neighbors?
It's not required for the board to do that to quit. Chief? Any problem?
No, that's what I'm here for. Chief Lee, I'm at 152 Venus K. I'm originally very disabled, and I have no objection.
And I'm the property owner on the other side, and I have a problem.
So, what's the address for this property?
148 Venus K.
And again, the board's so direct.
Input from the board, please.
I'm the neighbor president. I have no objection.
No problem. You?
I just have a question. There's gates there, right? Both sides?
Yes. You would put in gates you can open if necessary, correct?
It would be constructed minimally with a vertical so they want traffic to worry. I personally think more right into my landscaping management that they would keep it clean. I personally hear that as well. It would be sectioned off if you ever needed to take it out at my expense to get equipment in there or whatever you need to do.
And along with the document that he would prepare for you, we just put a drawing to that effect, correct?
Right.
Yeah, in that level of detail, that would go into the description of the appointment. There are to be gates, locate where the gates are.
Okay.
And to reimburse the district for whatever nominal legal fees are required to produce the agreement.
Would you agree to that?
Yes. In court.
Okay.
I still have one question.
Go ahead.
All right. So for you to get that to pass, or you have to have them locked, right? They have to be locked in gates.
Oh, great.
just like I have to have the door, has to have a sensor going into my pool area, you have to have sensors on when you build a house, you have to, you know. Because any way you have access. Okay, so a hurricane comes, you take off, how do we get, make sure those gates are open? You're going to give the board a key or something to open the...
We can require that as part of it.
Okay. I just mean, that's all I'm concerned about.
Or
if you leave and there's nobody here and the gates are locked, you know what crap happens. It goes down the swales to that. And if anything builds a dam on either one of those gates, the flow's not going to...
Well, he's totally... I believe what he's talking about is picketed railing with a fork, you know, 3 7/8 opening in it, so a lot would go through it, but
well, you can't have a kid can't have access.
That's
gotta
why
be built so that a kid cannot have access.
Yep. And that's why the 4-inch sphere. I built this for a living, so I understand that, and it's so that an infant can't get their head through it type of thing, but I think you have a valid point, and if you want that written into the agreement with Tony, maybe you can...
Is there any liability on the part of the district if we open that gate and a child goes through and jumps in the pool?
The district is engaging in formal operation. The district always has the opportunity to be exposed to actions that create liability. That's, I mean, I'm not going to get into that. You know, the district is out there. It's like any gate the district operates. It's like any facility that the district operates. It needs to operate in place with law standards.
Okay, so you've got a temporary fence in there around your pool now. So you can conceivably keep that netting, so if that instance would happen to come up, you could net your pool again to safeguard it? Okay, we can put that in the agreement as well.
There's only a harmless or anything to
any of that, yeah.
During a hurricane, if water dams up there, debris, if it dams up and floods somebody else,
that's what I mean. He's going to be blocking into the box. That's the only thing. As long as it can open, I don't care. You know,
as long as we don't have liability, if the green builds up and floods something.
And I think that if we've got an imminent hurricane coming, we can call him and tell him, please, you know, put your net over your fence and move those gates.
So I think if it's the consensus of the board, the appropriate motion would be to authorize the preparation of a standard agreement on the condition that the petitioner reimburse the district for whatever nominal fees are associated and bring that back to a future meeting for your approval, subject to the conditions that are part of the record here.
Yes. Do we want to make that a motion? You second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye. I will make it as onerous as possible. Now, in fact, I will provide as much protection as possible.
Okay. You guys
don't have
to stay if you don't want. I know you like the beach.
Mr. Chairman, I think that takes us down to any final supervisor requests or other new business that you might have.
I have one.
Go ahead, Dan.
We actually kind of fall under an old business supervisor, however. We had chlorine issues, chlorine level issues in our water, in our hospital water. We were, if you want to explain.
I'll explain it. We spoke about it in the past. On Newport Drive, at the end, I do have two auto flushers, but they're 3/4-inch lines. So even if I flush them for a long time, it doesn't draw the water. So in order for me to keep a 1-2 residual down there, I have to keep it at a 4-5 in the plant, which brings it into the community at a 3-4, which is all legal, but it's high chlorine. So is it possible we can either loop something at the end of Newport, which we spoke about, or increase the size of the auto flushers? And then also with the auto flushers, can they be discharged? Can we reroute those and discharge them into a storm drain? Is that allowed? Because when we dump on the ground, we get a lot of complaints because of flood speakers, yards, and streets.
We did prepare a memo a while back about that, showing some different options as far as doing some internal loopings of those systems and also looking at changing out those auto flushers. And I can get those and reissue those, and that you have an opportunity to take a look at.
Let's do that. I'd be curious. I had a similar issue at Key Marco many years ago, trying to maintain
disinfection. But
if you've got some technical memos that we could share in advance, I think that would be helpful. I understand the issue, though.
Are there other options, though, Mitch? Could we chlorinate the water someplace closer to that, or would it fall?
I don't think we want to do that. But I do have another question, though. Since we're on RO water only, is it necessary to use ammonia for chloramines? I don't understand why we can't just chlorinate free chlorine all the time. Is that a possibility?
I believe it is a possibility.
And with that, I'll lead into also April 1st, we're going to send out the notice that May 1st, we're going to do the annual free chlorine burn. So everyone will see that. We'll pass those out.
In regards to the discharge into the stormwater system in that area does not provide for any kind of detention. So we could potentially discharge directly into the canal, which is probably not a good thing to do. With the chlorine.
Could we take it to like the street gutter at least so that it runs along?
Ideally, you want it to discharge, that it can dissipate in the grass and open swales and so forth. So
we've tried to schedule it to where that's happening late at night everywhere so that it's dried up by the morning so the residents don't have to deal with it. But those over there, because they're so small, we have to run them so long and we still struggle. So
there might be another option if we can maybe discharge them into a subsurface precipitation system, maybe perforated pipe or something. That's something for us to maybe give some thought to.
What is the cost to the district to waste all that water?
It's substantial, I would imagine, yeah.
The first step would be try to perhaps do some looping and so forth, that we're able to move that water around, that we're not having to flush and get rid of it.
The other thing, Mitch, I've been noticing lately that thing's running midday a lot.
So if it's running midday, that means my operator is out in the community and his chlorine residual is not where he would like it to be.
Okay.
So he's manually running it.
I mean, yeah, it's been midday and it's running a lot of water.
So my issue with this, as a resident, and not just on the board, as a resident, I don't want to drink chlorine water at 4-0. I don't.
The state of Florida, I know the state of Florida says I have to be above a 0.6 and below a 4.0. Below a 4.0 is an annual average. The 0.6 is any time.
Yes.
And any time I fall below that 0.6, it's a...
And that's what chlorine means. Now, with free chlorine, I think the level's higher.
Yes, with free.
So that's the downfall.
And it's lower on the low end for free. It's a 0.2 for free and 0.6 for chloramines total.
Okay. So I got to reverse that.
If we did go to free, then we could run it lower. And I don't know. I don't know that the chloramines help because we're RO water. I mean, I would understand if we were lime softening or some other
things. Less potential for other things to be triggered.
Well, let's do this in the interest of today. If he has a technical memo that has previously been prepared, let's distribute that amongst the staff and also the board. And then if we can evaluate some looping alternatives or have you expand on that, then I think we need to have the benefit of what the cost would be in order to recapture that water that's there.
Yeah. And probably the other thing to be looked at is Mitch's question as far as switching over to free chlorine versus a chloramine-based disinfection process. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I have not looked at myself.
Understood.
One other thing, Mitch.
Yeah.
This parcel that Bruce was just in here talking about, you know, that I own the one next door to it. Well, my backyard where I live now, that has that auto flush. It has that auto flush, but it's this far from the bottom of the swale that runs out. Well, the one that's on that empty lot is way outside of the easement. It's 15, 20 feet into the middle of that property, and it's eroding that down into that swale. And my question is, why is that not in the easement instead of being up on the property?
I didn't install it. It's been there probably since the very beginning. That's just how it was. We have moved a couple over time, and we even eliminated one on Case Drive because we have one all the way down, and it wasn't an issue. But Newport, because it's the farthest away, that's the one that we
can look at that. If it was mislocated originally during the original development phase, it needs to be back within an easement that we otherwise...
Yeah, it's not in an easement, and in fact, it would probably be where the driveway would be.
Could you just look at that? And
see, yeah, I'll look at it.
You want to take a look at it together?
Incorporate that into the work plan.
Okay, that's all I have.
Thank you. Dan, do you have anything further?
I do have one more.
Oh, see, you just made it.
I have to go to the next meeting with a list of impact items that would be of interest to the restoration project and for engineers. And, how would you like to put that list together? So we are looking at anything that the increased groundwater, the water table, would affect. Would it affect our roads? It would affect things like that. Orchid Cove is looking at, they're here today, Orchid Cove is looking at whether or not it's going to affect them at their level. We should sit down with some members and put together a list to take to the meeting. Not scheduled yet to come out.
The one way to do that, if it's for the board, it has to be a public meeting like this. So if the board can wait until the next board meeting, maybe just set aside
15-20-30 minutes.
I'm quite sure it'll be before that.
Before
meeting with
court. Tony, if any of the board members have some items, could they just forward to the manager and come up with something?
We'd be happy to coalesce those
separately.
Yeah,
this has to do with the canal plugging related project.
Yes,
it's being done in the Belmead area.
The Everglades restoration project.
Yeah, I don't mind if you will just send those to my primary email address, or if you want to solicit and forward those on to me in advance of this meeting. The meeting's with the Corps or with the Basin Board of the District?
It's going to be both.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd be soliciting from the community.
Yeah.
Clarification. Then you will take all of those into.
And then have those in order to share if this is a data collection sort of effort for input.
They have asked us to come to the meeting with a list of items that we thought would be.
Okay. And they, again, is the basin administrator female?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as prioritizing, that can only happen in an open session.
Correct.
So Neil would be data gathering. From each board member, and so
anything that needs to be reported as a result of that, maybe we can just provide the board with a summary of those community concerns, and otherwise have them available for this the basin's directed meeting that they're involved in.
So if we're going to take them all and work that list down to a manageable number of issues, how would we work that down in between meetings here?
That's what I said. I don't mind collecting them, and we can refer them on to the water management staff, but then report that at your April meeting. You know, these are the items, and then if our board wants to weigh in and prioritize those, the appropriate time that would be as part of a regular board meeting.
Can we make it as a board give him authorization to make those decisions without it being a whole board decision? No? Okay. Just a question.
Yeah, I think the best thing to do would be for...
I don't want to.
No, okay. For those to be referred to me,
okay.
We'll regurgitate them back to the district staff to meet their request, and then we'll just compile them and summarize them and report those at your next public meeting.
Well, it may be of interest to them to see all the issues that the community believes are issues.
Yeah, understood.
Do we have time?
Yes, we'll just get that compiled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything further, Dan? Any other items to come before the board from the board's perspective?
Lindsay Case was here yesterday, and he flew in again because it was brought to his attention that he thought he had 3 feet of flood water on his new property back here, and that the Orchid Cove
community center here had flooded during the hurricane and whatnot. You met with him. Did you want to make any remarks to that?
He's just concerned and going to do some information gathering on if there are changes. Kind of the same lines we're working on with the restoration project. If
yeah.
there is something that he hasn't taken into consideration. He has to raise his elevations there to meet minimum building standards, right? So he's going to raise, I think he said about 40 figures he has to raise his property.
Yeah.
And then there's some concerns with some of the communities, Articola being adjacent, whether or not that is going to affect any issues with them. I did bring that to the Florida South Florida Water Management meeting that we had. They were pretty confident that the county, in their plans approval and things, would make sure that all that drained appropriately and would not affect any of the neighborhood establishments. And she said that shouldn't be a problem at all. That'll all be taken care of in the
And either the SDP or SIP process, all the preliminary engineering is going to be evaluated at that time.
One other aspect, too, is you would need to apply for South Florida Water Management, just a conceptual permit and then a construction permit. I don't know if that's happened yet, and that's all public record, and the board could also evaluate those applications, see if the board wants to provide input to South Florida in the formal permitting process to make sure or to see if there was any adverse impacts that would be indicated, or to make suggestions as to any other modifications. I think that's always, again, gets back to, I think that's always a good fiduciary job on the part of the board. Look at permits that affect the overall community, and then look at those and provide comments to the developer.
Since we're the new guys here, what's the size of that parcel?
About 48 acres.
48?
So I guess that's a question.
I'm not aware of any kind of application being made to the South Florida Water Management District yet. And in fact, we're kind of been on hold waiting for that pipe relocation project they wanted to do. They submitted some preliminary plans, but we have not seen anything back in probably a couple months.
Yeah.
The only other issue that Mr. Case had was the well road. And wondering what we're looking at doing with the well road. There's questions about, are the culverts adequate and everything? That's going to come up in the Corps Engineers meeting. They're going to take a look at that. If we do establish that we have impact from the restoration project, then the Corps Engineers will take a look at that road. It might have to be brought up to a 100-year floodplain, and they were mentioning that number. And then any culverts that are in that road would be engineered by the Corps, and
sure.
And we would be deciding that anyway. They would be deciding what has to be done with that.
Just possibly the water line?
Yeah, the height of it. Yeah. But then if that road does come to 100 years, then we're back to raising all the electric, the wellheads, everything along the road.
It might be even prudent to raise it to the 500-year flood elevation.
So would you
sure
guess that this last hurricane was a 500-year?
I'm not so sure about here, but I know on Sanibel, the surge and so forth was just slightly below the 500-year flood elevation.
I asked South Florida Water Management that question in the last meeting, and she was kind of hung on the 100-year flood level.
When I spoke to Mitchell about this also, when I heard that we of this 3 foot deep on his property and whatnot, Mitch said he was in here during the height of it, and he said it wasn't 12 inches deep.
Yeah.
So,
if there's no other business to come before the board, before the final?
I get some stuff for next time.
Sure.
Cool. Okay, well, first thing, the weir that was reinforced over there, talking about the Southwest Florida Management, that's there. And they said the reason they're building those culverts on 41 was because when the Miller Station pumped, it pumped everything dry at the Miller Station. I mean, the pumps were so strong, they pumped that whole area dry, but 6 L's flooded. So 6 L's is eventually going to either be a development or a water treatment plant or something, so they can't have the water going there, so that's why they're running it under 41. Hopefully that's where it's going to go. The other thing I want to address next time is the gun club and the
the maintenance fees. Were they two? I was there a week ago Friday, and there was 121 cars there. And that was one moment in time. So I still don't think we're charging the gun club the proper maintenance. I know that we had a whole session on that.
Do they have some sort of land lease?
Well, no, they own that. But I guess the suggestion from Rush Wire, Rush to be devised as a
okay.
And part of it was a trip generation component of that methodology. And I think the closest you could find was Gulf Coast, I believe, and some other. So one of the discussion points was if you want to refine that in the future, we're having a discussion to revisit that.
That's what I want to do next time.
Okay. But if we revisit it, I think it would be indicated maybe trip counts in a little dramatic.
Yeah, let me see what's in the working file so that I can put that in the backup, and then we'll show that on the agenda index at either the April or May meeting, whenever we can work it in. But there, if there was a methodology amendment that was done, and
no, but it wasn't followed. It was a complete revision of the assessment.
Okay.
And so what I would suggest is that we give Neil, or Mark Clayton Kevin, the authority to go to talk to Rob to get an estimate for revisiting the assessment methodology for the gun club and what he would need to analyze in order to prepare that revision.
Right. Did that address your concern?
Yeah. Okay.
Because the timing is for budget purposes, if the Neil needs to, the board needs to approve a tentative budget to set the public hearing, that needs to be by June 15th. So if we want to be engaged, do the data collection necessary, he needs appropriate to revisit the allocation of units and the impact of that facility. I mean, now we have time to get that to work. So we have an estimated cost for him to do that in a time frame to have that before your budget meeting. So if the board wants to revise the assessment level or assessment methodology, they have to go through the rule amendment. They would have time to do that before the budget adoption.
Chairman, there may be one other area of the community that may need to have a look done as far as the assessment also, and that's the marina, because there has been some changes at the marina itself as far as some dockage and so forth.
The size of the boats?
Yeah, changes in the size of the boats and so forth. So that may be a second area that needs to be investigated.
Okay, third that I would like to see. We've talked about this before. That's why if we're going into this assessment, I knew it was going to get to the boat dock, and that's when we get to the lawsuit. And this is going to turn into much lighter than the SBA. Let's check the assessment when we don't want. So I think we've got to look at the whole thing if we're going to do it.
Right.
There are other areas of this assessment that I feel, and I'm sure some of the other board members feel, are on the line.
Tony, do you have in your working files a copy of the? If you would provide that, it'd be a lot easier than me trying to go through the.
I'll send it all to you.
Okay.
And that's where I was hoping we would get the one from 2006 or 7 that we paid for him to do as well, so as a comparison.
Rusty.
Yeah,
it was him.
2006 or 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I was kind of curious why we paid for that same thing twice and we never saw the first one.
I was impressed with that.
That's not an excuse.
I understand.
You're still in college.
I'm still a bat. I'm still in college. Thank you. Yeah, it's remarkable in a short period of time.
Okay, and I got one more thing. And because we've developed a lot of DRBOs around here, and I'm starting to get noise complaints from people. I don't hear anything in my house when I close the windows. But I don't know if we can use Marco Island as a guide. Whatever they're doing, they have the same rules. I mean, I had a property at Marco, and the reason I didn't rent it was you get one noise complaint, it's $250 for the house, $250 for the people that are renting it. Next week you get another complaint, it's $500 for the renter, $500 for the people that own it. You get another complaint, it's $1,000. You know, it just keeps going up, stuff like that. I mean, there's got to be, and I don't know what the noise cutoff times are and whatnot, but like last night it was, you know, well past 11.
Yeah.
This is something that's starting to ramp up, so I think we need to get ahead of it.
Yes.
CDDs don't have the ability to impose development orders or anything for the county. County has a detailed scientific noise ordinance, and the recourse would be to file complaints with the County Code Enforcement Board, because there is a totally separate ordinance that deals with noise and what is allowed and time frames and the whole gamut.
Yeah, the county has a rental registration ordinance for rental, but I don't believe
that's aggressive or Well, isn't it? I thought if anything was, it was like a 12% tax on the money too for the county.
That's the tax factor, and we were fortunate to represent the tax partner to make sure that the entire county got the course of all the tax money out.
Right.
And so that's been resolved with an agreement with the CRPD as to how to do that. But again, that's there's a county tour development tax ordinance that utilizes the state statute. Tax partner is the entity that enforces that, and the stronger very active in ensuring that the appropriate taxes are collected, parties are registered, covering in detail about how to try to make sure that the taxpayers' interests are being served. But again, that's an entire county ordinance. This district does not have land use zoning or building permit.
Okay, so any complaints would just be filed with code?
Yeah, if you want the county to get more aggressive in your ordinance process, that's something to take up with your commissioner. And I don't know what the appetite is of this board of county commissioners if they want to get more aggressive, such as Mark White.
Well, yeah, out here it's usually dead quiet.
Yeah.
After night.
So. Yeah, but there is a very effective, and I mean it's down to where code enforcement officers are trained and certified and carry decibel meter readings and the whole gamut.
Okay.
You can download a decibel meter right on your phone.
Yep. I've done that too.
I have an answer. We will buy and we make a lot of noise.
Would that be something that Kevin, could you look into that for us, or is that not under your purview?
For
no, we just have to call.
That's really a county.
I just wondered if he would want me, the guy, to do the calling.
That's really not a district.
Yeah, I'm going to
call you.
All right, we won't put it on your plate then.
If you'll make a note, your next meeting is April the 21st here at 9:30. And are there any final public comments of a general nature?
Sure.
Again, I've just asked that you be recognized by the chairman.
Go ahead. Catherine Oswald, I know that the utility bills probably went out a little bit late this month because of the changeover, but I'm hoping that we'll get it in a timely manner. We used to get it like two weeks before it was due. I got it 5 days before it was due.
Well,
we should
suspend this. If there's a fine for being late, maybe we should suspend that while we're going through this.
Yeah, I would say that in the event that there's an old policy somewhere that those fines not be imposed until we update and have a new third party vendor.
Yeah.
I will tell you it's. I was given a thumb drive. Why they elected not to actually mail those bills on the normal schedule, I don't know. Not important.
And it doesn't matter to me because I pay it through my bank online. But don't we usually get like a return envelope?
I think that would kind of be ridiculous to send a thing if you're going through the bank.
No, I'm talking about a return envelope in the bill so that people that pay by mail have that envelope with the address on it.
Okay.
All right.
Other public
comments? Ray, I have two things. One on the hauling of the raw sewage. That got slightly shut down here 5 years ago. All of Fort of the Islands was up in arms about it with the two boards ago. They've been trying to fix that problem ever since. It's EPA involved, federal government's involved. His law firm is involved. And Collier County doesn't want anything to do with it. They've made that really clear. The problem is, someone said, it's 4 feet above water. And there's 5 years ago, the plan was going to be $55 million. Now it's almost double that, and there's a population of 600 people. So it's suicide to start hauling their sewage. It goes from Nandina Beach, or I guess it goes here now. Originally it went there. It's absolutely just a death and it will never end. But it did get flatly turned down by the residents here 5 years ago with the CID board, and it should be in the minutes. On the second, I really think it's time we start playing nice. I think a lot of people know I'm the one that found the problem with the flooding. And it was when I got back from up north 3 weeks after the hurricane. And when I did, I was standing with Mitch and Bear, and we were looking at parcel 13. We had just come back from the well road. 3 weeks later, there was still water coming over the well road. That's what made me ask the questions. We have photographs. I have a lot of photographs. Lindsay has some of the photographs. There was easily 3 feet of water on parcel 13, easily. His engineer verified it yesterday. But the problem is this. We have a twofold problem. Part of it is our mile and a half, 2 mile well road is in disrepair. It's been in disrepair for a long time. They inherited it. Nobody ever paid any attention to it, really, until Irma. Irma was 5 years ago, September, after a full moon. This is not from surge from the ocean. The surge really ended here at the rear. This is from water coming down from the north because of the new project and its saturation. It's doing what it was meant to do. It's an $800 million project. It's been going 20 years. The problem is this, and why I brought it up to Orchid Cove. Not that we were going to flood. And by the way, I never said any part of Orchid Cove flooded, and nobody ever said that to him. It didn't flood. We didn't flood. We were actually a foot higher. But parcel 13 has never flooded before. I have photographs after Irma. 22 inches of rain in 48 hours. Didn't flood. It flooded this time. The gun pump has flooded twice. This time, there were 2 feet of water inside the shotgun offices. I have photographs. And the problem we have is the well road is creating a dam. I have a letter from the Army Corps of Engineers that said it needs to be completely redone, that the culverts need to be redone, and it's a big problem. So it's diverting water towards us directly, where before the water went south, and that's half the problem. The other half of the problem is they never modeled us here, and we're dead south, because when they blocked the four feeder canals, they say the Pocket Union Canal is going to go down 3 or 4 feet, and that's going to alleviate the problem. Now, they're spending $26 million to protect Lipman Farms tomatoes 8 miles west of here, because Lipman Farms had a battery of attorneys that went to the preliminary meetings. We didn't. We trusted them. And it's not South Florida Water, it's the Army Corps of Engineers. I've met with all three of them. Lisa Keeler, Steve Baden, and the guy from Spatahatchee Springs. It's a big problem, and it's getting way worse. That's why I brought it to their attention. And it's not going to go away. The well road, no matter how it gets fixed, the water main is below it, the water line. Nobody seems to know how old the water line is. Well, it's over 60 years old. It's concrete asbestos pipe. All of it is, all the way across the road. It was put in, as far as I can find, when both hotels were built. That's all that was here, 1960 to 64. Those pipes are at the end of their age, concrete asbestos. They're on the CIP report. This one is $1 million. Okay? So if you're going to replace the culverts,
why is he doing
it? It only makes sense that you're going to take out the pipe as well and replace the pipe. And the pipe really needs to go on top of the road on a trestle instead of underneath.
Okay, Ray, this is something for another day.
Well, okay, we're not done yet.
No, yes, we are.
No, we're not. I'm speaking.
I run the meeting. You've had more than your 3 minutes.
I'm
you're done.
Speaking.
We've already discussed this before.
No, we did. You turned it down. But I brought it up.
What down?
Well, you should have your meeting with Truckee.
I did.
Okay. So.
And Truckee knows that I'm going to a private meeting with Lisa Keeler and him and you on March 28th at 9 o'clock. That didn't come up. Oddly enough, neither did my hand here.
Let's see if there's any other public comment. There's been a lady in the back of the room.
A question regarding this. How will the other residents at the port be able to give their questions and concerns about the proposed hydrologic changes prior to the meeting that you're going to have with the Corn and Water Management? How do you contact them?
Yeah, if you have areas of concern at their request, we're going to be the referral entity. If you want to see me after the meeting, I'll be happy to give you my email address.
Should I put out to next door, so my only option, should I tell them that they can go to POI website and go to
the there's a referral portal there that if they prefer to do that, those come to me. It's under the,
that would be an option.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Stable here, Tate Rock. First, Tony, could you make sure you and Mr. DeBose get together?
Oh, we've had a call.
Okay.
I'm going to talk with the chairman and the manager.
Fine, thank you.
We spoke yesterday.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Anyone else?
No, quick. I have a couple questions. Number one, did we terminate the agreement with the aeration of the pump? Is that done?
We were supposed
to. I know you voted against, y'all voted to terminate it, but has it been terminated?
I don't know what Cal did with it, to tell you the honest truth. That's why we have to have me look into it, because I've quite frankly been going by there to make sure that there's not electricians out there, because we can't get this information out of Cal.
Well, my only question is, I would like y'all to revisit that decision. We have the most beautiful green pea soup in those creeks and at a pond. And the only way you're going to get rid of it is to aerate it. I understand the problem with the companies and the electricians and all that other stuff. But I think if more pressure was put on them to get it done, that it's a $1 million neighborhood, and we have three ponds that are absolutely great. So I would just like y'all to look at, again, think about that.
We can look at it again.
Revisit it.
All right.
The last question I have is actually to David, not to David. We budgeted $360,000 last year for the beginning of stormwater maintenance, which was a big thing amongst residents here to start doing something to maintain the stormwater. Most of that money was to go to the caves to fix those, like you said before, the canal, the little easement that goes down the center and the one that goes off on the side, and also on Newport Drive. But I don't see any vote to go ahead and get David to start doing that.
I'm trying to figure out what it is to spend the money on to take that.
That's what we were trying to figure out. What are we responsible for? We don't want to go out and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on something that we're not responsible for. That's what we're trying to pin down. What are we actually responsible for? Because from what I've read, the stuff in the caves is the responsibility, that the maintenance of it is the private property owners. So as a board, unless somebody tells us different, I don't think that we should be going out and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on cleaning something that is not our responsibility.
And my last question was, you mentioned something at the last meeting about an agreement with 162, 163,
Mr. Meston.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
An agreement as far as their violation for the easement. Is there any agreement or not? What's the status of that? Because
That has been going on forever.
The status was the county was here, the enforcement people were here, and they put all that enforcement on hold for 2 months while we could come to the bottom of it. They were supposed to come out and meet with us to tell us exactly what was what.
We're going
to
meet next week.
Oh, we're going to meet next week.
So I think, Mr. Chairman, it's appropriate then to have an agenda item of status report for meeting on
We'll look into that and get back to the next meeting.
Well, we're looking at more than one.
Sorry?
We're looking at more than one.
Right, but that one, yeah, that one's specific.
Any other comments?
I just have one last question, and that is, from what I can ascertain, any information that we need or that has been discussed or that we want, we're probably going to have to go on the CID website daily to see if anything's been updated, because nobody's going to let us know anything otherwise, correct?
How else do you... You know, I asked about this a while back. How do we communicate any other way? You know, I originally...
No, I'm just asking.
And I'm asking,
to,
and I'm asking for your...
I have to check the CID website every day. If I do, then I guess I'll have to put it on my calendar.
I wish there was a way. And I would be open to anybody's suggestions on how we can do this. I originally wanted to get everybody's email address and be able to send it out, which I'm finding out that that is not a possibility. So other than on our website, I don't know where else we can get this information out, other than occasionally putting a letter in with the water bill. And if anybody has any ideas on that, I'm all ears. We all love to hear it. Go ahead.
I support your idea of having an email list for the CID Canada to ship with that. If you said it's not possible, I think that's ludicrous, first of all. I think another way you could do it is there's a number of community associations here where the board could distribute it to the presidents of the HOAs, and they can distribute it to their collective thing. Now, for the areas that don't have a HOA, like Sanctuary Point, maybe you guys can come up with your own email list or come up, generate one that people don't feel is going to intrude their privacy. Just a
suggestion. Would you have time to look into doing some of that?
Sure, I'd love to help you with that. Okay. If I can,
go ahead.
Yeah, just to make it clear, any email addresses that come into the district are public
services.
So you bring the HOA, you hire people that have an HOA, you send it to the HOA email, and it gets forwarded. Email that address is too easy to create. This is
public record anyway. You go on Google and get somebody else to do it.
I'm sorry, but I don't see how that saves any time other than just going to the website. I don't see how.
So just a push instead of a pull.
Yeah.
This gives the board, if there's information that's important, like a meeting or something like that, they can push information out and give it out to the community. To have people have to look at the board, you got to go know to look. How do you know to look? You can look 10 days in a row, nothing happens. You miss the 11th day, and then Steve needs to send out a notification. This seems like a simple problem we should be able to solve. That's all I'm saying. Or emergencies, yeah, perfect. You know, you could use it for hurricane notifications instead of using next door. So that everybody gets this briefing. If the board wants to, you set up a system where people can enlist in code red that's only utilized for emergency purposes under Florida statutes, information given by people past the code red is confidential and stuff from the public records office. It's not utilized in general information. That's your focus of that.
I think we should do both.
Just one thing quick,
Capital.
In the future, don't say somebody's ideas are stupid. They have their ability to say what they want.
I used the wrong one. I'm sorry. But this gentleman is right. This is so, y'all are making this complicated, and it's not complicated. Email addresses, people's addresses, people's date of birth are available on Google. And
but our attorney is the one who
advising us about where we get into liabilities when we put
people. Well, just as a matter of the metropolitan state of Florida, that that members of the public need to be advised, that when they provide an email address to the public entity, becomes a public record.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not there are other projections out there that find it, some people do not like their email addresses in the public record. That's all.
And I would even go further.
That's enough. Thank you.
If we do a letter to HOA and tell them that, and if you would like to provide your email, we'll be happy to put it in our
Tuesday, March 28th.
Okay.
And that's okay with me. It's okay with you. What basically happened is Lisa, who we discussed, she's come back and said she'd like to have a meeting with that gentleman who spoke. That's right. I didn't know who it was. This just happened. So.
Yeah.
This is not the meeting with the core. With
understood.
And no, I'm just discussing him. Is that what we want to do? I don't know that. I don't know
the
background.
I think that we should. If she has asked for a follow-up meeting to the one that y'all had, I think we ought to keep that at our level for the time being, not invite other people. This guy,
she's asking about him.
He's going to be there. Okay. So he's already a member. What is representing himself? Ray used to be a board member. Okay. Why is he concerned about this future development parcel? And I mean, why do we have a dog in hand fight?
Not really. Start with Ray. So this is something he resigned from the board if he wanted to run all this stuff. He should have stayed on the board. But he wants his name out there. Like he said, you didn't mention my name. It's just a big thing, right?
Okay.
So he has got open table lined up about the water that's coming out. And we're going to address that with the Corps of Engineers.
It's not bad.
If all the things that come from the restoration project, what can we do about it? How are we going to take it? Right? And Lisa said that when we get to the Army Corps of Engineers meeting, that she wants people to consider it. It's vacant, it's saying she wants the board. Well, at that meeting, but in order to achieve Ray, he's going to have this pre-meeting to listen to everything again. But she told me she was going to look at the public and very public interest.
Yeah, that's the first I didn't know this, so I didn't remember.
That was the pre-meeting. I wasn't excited about it. I think I even wrote it back. I'm not really excited about meeting with Ray again.
Yeah.
But she's asking for it, and she's in our corner to walk us into the Army Corps of Engineers meeting. I hate to say no to her. It's something she wants to do. I think she's doing it to, maybe she has to say she had it or something, you know. Because if Ray complains, and he's like, I'm a problem, if he complains, maybe she has to address it. Right? That's the way to address it. So I'm not sure what the deal is, but I don't want to tell
you. I agree. 100%.
Would it make it, would we, I would imagine that when we have this follow-up meeting with the commissioner, would this make it harder? Would that make it harder to not make him part of it if we have this meeting, or does it matter?
He wants to be included in all of
this. I know.
But I was trying to make it clear.
Well, you can see by the interaction with that guy.
I don't want to bring him in.
Yeah.
That would be a huge concern.
Yeah. Well, that's my that's well.
Well, maybe we should just indicate to her that if she wants to have a meeting with him as a citizen or a what he perceives to be an affected resident, but I mean, anything that we're doing on behalf of the district, we're not obligated to invite him. Those are staff level meetings. You're the board's designated liaison, and let's see if we can't convey that. If she wants to have some meeting and let him rant and rave and show his pictures and that sort of thing, I don't know that we necessarily need to be a party to that.
Okay. Yeah, kind of pseudo makes him part of the stuff.
Yeah. If I was being there. I was afraid to tell her no.
We can convey to her from a staff perspective that we prefer not. If she wants to get historical background information from him as an affected resident or some, you know, member of the public who has, you know, extreme concerns, we would prefer not to be a party to that. But if we have an obligation to coalesce or you know, pull with other concerns on behalf of our board or the community, we'll pursue it from that end.
Okay, so you'll take care of it.
We'll
take care of it. We're interested in
it.
We'll
talk to you. Let me know.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel
like
I picked up on that pretty quickly.
Oh, so I'll talk to her. She's going to be out of town next week. So we'll try to do that today.
I miss that old middle meeting. It's well grown. That's the one that makes a 90-degree turn.
No,
I years ago, I you going down the
So you kind of go to the north, but then you're pushing further east.
Thank you. Yes.
He should be in the known vendor file that we say.
I think next time you were in the
Did we need to speak about something?
No, that stack of invoices that I wrote today, those are originals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just leave those back, or if you want us to scan them and send them to you,
you know, I'll drop them off maybe tomorrow.
That would be fine.
Tomorrow
we're closed.
Monday.
This one,
we got 2 hours.
You know what?
Right.
The thing was great. That hasn't happened before. Since we've been, but, you know, he's the one who quit from the old board. And it's all about you and me. You know, I'm it's just.
Oh, okay.
But that's and that's nothing. I mean, it's where he slammed his fist on the table. God damn it.
All right.
You know.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
So,
I'll see
you.
I'm surprised we got out of here this early.
Yeah, 2 hours.
No.
I just wanted to park his. I was sending you information.
Hold on. What?
Thank you for
yeah, I've been doing this 40 years, so
clearly.
Yeah, I don't know if you were here the last time I was here, but I was a county manager here. I was the chief executive officer of the county for 10 years. Have been doing this now for 22 years, so I consult and we made big districts like that. I think it helps everyone's peace of mind to have a little bit of a flow. And here's what I like in return. Before I even agreed to come down here, I did a little inquiry. I said,
go to the conference first. This is what our parameters are. I didn't expect you to
act.
No, I
understand that
this board. I just wanted to know,
and,
you like, know, what does Mark Weiland have
involved,
like,
and
what does Connor have
to be retired or still working on that kind of thing, and so that after 3 weeks,
I think so.
Where are you from?
I'm actually originally from Colorado.
Okay.
Still live there part of the
year. What part?
Just outside of Boulder, in unincorporated Boulder County. Longmont mailing address.
Yeah, Loveland, Colorado is one of my favorite areas.
Oh, well, then you know exactly where I am.
Yeah. What a wonderful area. Gateway to the park.
Yeah.
Loveland's such a nice town.
It really is. It's just grown so tremendously. As everything on the Front Range, that kind of the. In California, it is, which is not a good thing. So.
My family is blessed that we've had a vacation home in Idaho.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing it there, too.
30 miles west of Jackson, Wyoming.
Oh, yeah. Good time.
And so, the going rate for new construction there is almost $1,000 a foot. And they have so much work. I'm 30 miles, I'm on the west side of the Tetons.
Yeah.
So you got to go up and over the pass to get where we are. But we're about 30 miles west of Jackson. It's nice. Got a home on the Teton River. I'm a little familiar with, I'm an old city and county manager. Loveland always has a reputation as being a well-managed municipality. They did things right.
Longmont actually has been really progressive. They've done things like they put in a fiber infrastructure to all the things and stuff like that, which I think is real progressive. Put even a business friendly room in there. So they've been very progressive. Better than, I mean, Boulder's, like you said, Boulder. I'm a Colorado native. I grew up there. So I've seen all this over 2 years. But
I got a friend that lives in, is it Idaho Springs?
Yeah.
Well, spent quite a bit of time at his place. That's high elevation.
Yeah, Idaho Springs is a little bit up. Yeah, it's on the way up to the higher elevation.
He's got a nice little man.
Yeah, Idaho Springs is nice.
Nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you, too.
You spend the winters in the Everglades? So you don't ski or snowboard then?
I do, actually. I'm an avid skier. It's one thing I gave. My wife has family down here.
Okay.
So this is a compromise. But I went back. I go back for a week or two and ski.
I don't ski much anymore. I've got a brand new grandson, so when we were out there last week, my son's a big snowboarder, so he. I was at town last week. We went out there and we skied a place called Grand Targhee.
Yep, I know Targhee. I've skied there.
Yeah, really, really nice.
Awesome. I can tell you stories where I ski in waist deep powder
there. Yeah, it's so much. All that weather comes in off the Pacific and hits the western range there.
We're walking out, we'll walk down.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, no, it's a. I haven't frequented up there much, but I've been up there a couple
it's
of times.
It's still nice.
It's gorgeous.
But they live to hate people from California and increasingly Texas and Atlanta, believe it or not.
Atlanta, really?
Yeah.
We've dealt with the Texas thing and now the California thing.
Oh,
Colorado,
yeah.
But.
Yeah, the people in Idaho, they're 30 years behind you people from Colorado.
I don't know about that. Well, that part of Idaho. We have friends that moved up to Idaho Falls, which is just south of there.
Oh, yeah. We fly in there. If we don't fly into Jackson, we fly into Idaho Falls.
Idaho Falls is a nice little town.
Windy.
Yeah.
It's one of the windiest places.
Well, you're close to Wyoming, right? It's always blowing.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
First name again? Steve. Steve, yeah, nice to meet you.
Nice
I'm looking
you.
Forward to being your manager here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Thank you.
Address and a password to go with it.
Okay.
That's what I understand. See how it happened today?
I did not intend to talk as much as I did, but I'm trying to create an expectation here that meetings should take an hour and ought to be on a business level.
I like the way
and this stuff where they used to be here for 4 and 5 hours.
No,
I don't want any of us doing that.
It's like watching a pro at work. So I just sit back and take it in.
No,
I appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you
for what you do.
Yeah.
Going to be talking with the fire guys anymore?
I can. Okay. I was on a conference call the other day with the City of Everglades attorney, this young litigator, and I've also talked to Dan, and I did a little back channel stuff, but they need to put some pressure on the greater Naples guys. The North Collier Fire District would be willing to negotiate an assuming responsibility for both the contract here and the contract. So that ought to sober these guys up. They would take the players and they'd be happy to. And the conventional wisdom in town is that they are much better managed and a more professional fire institution.
I thought it. I talked to Creator Naples and talked to the county, and I went to see Mayor Grimm just to get his opinion because he's not going to see where we are. He's a little bigger player.
Your tax base is better than his, though.
He wants to eat it too, because in consolidation, if you want to be the player, if you want the potential to pick these up as they grow, then you have to take them, right? You can't just say that, okay, I'm going to take all the money that we're paying.
No, we're going to cherry pick the communities that we want to serve. It don't work that way.
We always call it an expansion district. So if you want the expansion district where your fire department can grow into, and at some point
consolidation comes up, you take and you deal with it. In the first couple of years, it might cost a little bit of money. It cost us, and we did. But by the fifth or sixth year, everything was great.
Right.
Right.
And it makes business. If I hear anything, my immediate concern was that if they were going to walk out of here on the 24th, the county needed to reach out to another district on a mutual aid basis to bring somebody in. And I did some back channel talks with the North Collier District.
Okay.
And, they are the big boys in town, and they've got unlimited resources and tax base. They said they would be willing to enter into those negotiations with the county in the event that Greater Naples defaults. And so I've left it up to either Ed Finn or Dan Rodriguez, who are the two deputy managers, to get back to me. But Dan told me yesterday that there's no imminent threat of walking out of the fire station. They're back to negotiating. I don't know that we should be a direct party to the negotiations, but I hired Dan Rodriguez and Ed Finn, and I hired them both, and they're nearing the end of their careers. They both know that if there's anything that we, Port of the Islands, need to know or update or come to meetings, I'll be quick to show that with you.
Okay.
All right? Have a good weekend.
Call up, I'm gonna make with Lisa in South Florida to exclude this guy.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna call her and just say we don't really need to be part of another meeting.
She has already sized him up for what he is.
She emailed him to Dan directly about that. See, that's why I didn't know what he was talking about.
Okay.
So he had already accepted the meeting request. She was asking me if I was coming.
I think the approach should be that, hey, we're brand new. We've been here 3 weeks. The board has designated him as their liaison as it relates to our well field impacts.
Mm-hmm.
And any other meetings, we don't want to be a party to those preliminarily. You can blame me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can do that.
That
I know
guy's
that.
A problem. And if I need to call her directly, but if
I'm
you
not
have
to do it.
If you have a meeting between you and I and Dan and anything
for.
That we have, then I'm happy to attend it.
Yes. I thought she was going to be in Castro.
Yeah.
Or that's what I thought we were scheduling.
Yeah.
She kind of slipped that in.
Yeah.
So.
Not sure why the Corps is involved unless somehow they are the ones that issue the permits to South Florida to plug all these canals up. So if this guy is, they're filing complaints with everybody. I mean, they're almost done with the project, as I understand it.
She has an aerial that's really good to look at. Shows all these roads and everything that are filled in, canals filled in.
And there's some enormous pumping station up there near I-75. I don't know if they're pumping water out of the canals along I-75 or where, but then they
got this big flume thing.
Yeah.
That, and then it sheet flows all down through here.
All those things.
Okay.
Pretty amazing.
I need to.
It's interesting. She's very nice.
I need to go just so I'm better informed.
It would have been the three of us would have had a great meeting. Okay. This guy, I don't want him on them. I don't want him on our team.
No. And
that's how things don't get done.
Have you been up the Wellfield Road that they have talked to? I mean, how much? Is it 3 feet off the ground or?
No, a little less than that.
Okay,
yeah.
And it's probably poorly maintained, some old Lime Rock Road or something.
Yeah, it's rough.
Okay.
It's rough. And, but she, I think what's happened is, I think that guy that spoke, they did all this for 6Ls. And I think they've kind of been threatened that you did all this for 6Ls, what about Port of the Islands?
Yeah.
I think she's trying to land the plane because she's being so overly friendly that it's weird for a government official.
All right.
So, I'll call her. She's going to be out of town next week. That's why I'm going to do it right now.
I let Steve take the original invoices that have the pay check stubs just to appease him. I said, if you want copies of these, I said, just let Kevin or I know. But I need him back after this weekend. He said he'd bring them to our office Monday.
He told me the same thing. I said, do you have any invoices? Because
there are not extra copies, and I don't want Lee pissed off with me because...
No, we've probably got her back on track.
Remind me, call me or send me an email Monday and just make sure that if we need to follow up with Steve. But he said, no. He says, Kevin doesn't have to come get him. I'll bring him to your office.
And then if he wants me to schedule this walkthrough at the Record Center... Can I just get the phone number from Kenzie and do that?
Kenzie's got it, and you don't need to be there. I mean, he's the public official. Yes, they have a room, air-conditioned, big conference table.
And what you should do is get from Kenzie a copy of that index, and because we'll have to tell them in advance what boxes we want pulled down and brought to the room.
And I'll just get them all pulled, right? Or let him choose.
Let him choose. And if he wants to go up there, you know, once a week for a month and look at all 43 boxes, I don't care.
Yeah.
I just...
this is an easy win.
And I told him that, too. I said, you know, Kevin and I don't have to be there. You're the chairman of the stinking board. If you want to go up there and dig through these boxes, we'll leave it at that.
Thanks again.
All right. Talk to you Monday.